desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all evening, morning, afternoon, whatever the case may be, in whatever time zone you reside in so prolifically out there. We cover all of you and all of those time zones. This is a program called Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, weekend version. How you doing? I am great. Well, in an hour, Major Ed Dames got an email from somebody here. Last couple of times that Major Dames was on your program, he predicted that the next economic malaise will come due to an avian-borne illness, sort of like SARS. Well, guess what? There is a SARS, bird-like flu, infecting chickens all over the Far East. And just today on the Drudge Report, there's a headline about the bird flu surfacing in Delaware. True enough. All true enough. And yes, he did say that. In fact, let me give you a little preview of some of the things that Ed has decided he would like to talk about. How's that? World War III. He says it's really close. An alien life form's continued telepresence on Earth. Now, that's kind of interesting. I wonder what he means. An alien life form's telepresence on Earth. SETI is looking in the wrong place, in the wrong way, he says. Earth's most intelligent non-human life form. You'll never guess, he says. Very intelligent. Does not like to cuddle. Wonder what that could be. The strange object on the surface of Mars. Oh, yes, I want to talk about that anyway. The photo. He says that for him, when he wrote this, was a work in progress, and he may have it complete for us tonight. Ghosts. He's got something to say about ghosts and looming catastrophes of all sorts. Crop failures, overlapping even the problem of the avian-borne disease. That was, by the way, for your reference, mentioned in his October 12th, 2003 appearance on this program. Just in case you're keeping track. Now, the photograph, the Mars photograph, yes, well, I'm looking at it right now. Of course, it's on the website, coastcoastam.com, and, you know, it purports to be in the excited eyes of the person seeing it, perhaps a UFO. I don't know. It could be dust. It could be a flake of dust. It could be a little dust on the camera. It could be a pixel missing, any of the above, or it could be the mothership at 20 miles. I have no idea. Could be any of the above, but there's not enough evidence beyond a speck there to go beyond that kind of speculation. If you blow it up, it's kind of square like a pixel, like it might be gone. They've had problems like that before. So I don't know. Or dust. I mean, why not? There's no one to wipe it off up there. As far as I know, I have an outside camera, and I keep it covered all the time, except when I'm you know, trying to take night shots of the stars, something like that. Then I uncover it. That's it, though. Rest of the time, it stays covered because of, guess what? Dust. We're out here in the desert. We get a lot of it, and it looks just like that, potentially. Actually, you know what? It doesn't. A speck of dust actually doesn't look like that. Speck of dust actually wouldn't be seen because it would be out of focus. It would appear more as sort of just why everything wouldn't look quite right, because it would be that much closer to the lens. So probably not dust. Well, maybe it is a mothership. John Kerry coasted to victory in the Maine caucuses Sunday, wrapping up a three-state weekend sweep that pushed the Democratic frontrunner closer to that party's nomination. And it was, of course, an awfully big a disappointment for some. Howard Dean, for example, who, well, it just didn't work out right for Howard Dean, did it? President Bush went on the Sunday morning talk shows and denied that he marched America into war under false pretenses, said the U.S.-led invasion was necessary because Saddam Hussein could have developed a nuclear weapon. Quote, I don't think America can stand by and hope for the best, end quote, the president said. Bush suggested Saddam may have destroyed or perhaps spirited out of the country the banned weapons. Maybe. But on the other hand, if you're about to have a war, you'd probably want to use them. After an outbreak of avian influenza was discovered at a Delaware farm, state authorities have tested several nearby facilities but have not released the results. Scientists will not release the results of a first round of tests until a second round is complete. That worries me. And this one dropped in my lap. More than 10,000 birds died mysteriously in eastern China's Jiangsu province, dropping like rain from the sky, according to state media there on Thursday. Farmers and other witnesses in a little village in Tohoku City saw flocks of bramble finch suddenly fall from the sky on Tuesday. This was in the Beijing Youth Daily. Most of the birds were dead when they hit the ground. Some were injured. The birds look like sparrows. They're small in size. Officials from the local Center for Disease Prevention and Control rushed to that scene. Samples from the birds were taken to a lab in nearby Nanjing City for testing to determine the cause of their in-flight, for the most part, death. So that, they'll look at contamination problems of, in their food or water or the environment, but with all the bird news going around, that's pretty damn weird, if you ask me. This is, so that you know, I'm not making these things up. The following is from the BBC. The finding of a parrot with an almost unparalleled power to communicate with people. Listen, please, closely to this story. This is unparalleled power to communicate with people has brought scientists up short. The bird, a native African gray called Nikisi, has a vocabulary of 950 words and shows signs of a sense of humor. He invents his own words and phrases if he's confronted with, this is so important, he makes up his own words and phrases if he's confronted with novel ideas with which his existing repertoire cannot cope, just like a child, a human child would do. Nikisi's remarkable abilities, which are said to include, ready for this, telepathy, are featured in the latest BBC Wildlife magazine. Nikisi is believed to be one of the most advanced users of human language in the animal world. About, now here's a fact that will surprise you, about 100 words are needed for half of all reading in English. Did you know that? Only 100 words are needed for half of all the reading we do in English. So if Nikisi could read, he'd be able to cope with a wide range of material. Polished wordsmith. He uses words, listen to me, in context with past, present, and future tenses, and is often inventive. One Nikisi-ism was flied, F-L-I-E-D, for flu, and another, pretty smell medicine, to describe the aromatherapy oils used by his owner, an artist based in New York. When he first met Dr. Jane Goodall, this is going to rock you back, the renowned chimpanzee expert, after seeing her in a picture with apes, Nikisi said, "Got a chimp?" He appears to fancy himself as a humorist. When another parrot hung upside down from its perch, he commented, "You got to put this bird on the camera." Down from its perch, he commented, "You got to put this bird on the camera." Dr. Goodall says Nikisi's verbal fireworks are a, quote, outstanding example of interspecies communication. In an experiment, the bird and his owner were put in separate rooms and filmed as the artist opened random envelopes containing picture cards. Analysis showing the parrot had used appropriate keywords 3 times more often than could possibly be likely by chance. Now, this is, so if you want to find this, the BBC is publishing this, and it's incredible. I mean, what does this say about a bird? a bird that can think in past tense, current tense, future tense. What does that imply? A sense of humor. What does that imply in a bird? What does that mean? The ability to communicate at this level in sentences, what does that mean about the animals that we have all around us? Well, last night, the African general, by the way, if you didn't hear that interview, you really, really, really have to go back to the archives and listen to the interview of the African general last night, who he claims he is the man who ordered the shoot down of the UFO over South Africa that Bob Lazar, he suggests, later saw with a dent in it toward the back of the hangar. Well, here's an interesting little ditty for you. The following from the Associated Press. Does it get any better? Russian and American scientists say they have created two new super heavy elements that will reside at the extreme end of chemistry's periodic table of elements. Now, I'm going to stop reading here. You remember element 115? Think back. How many of you remember? Yeah. Element 115 was the fuel that was described as powering the alien spacecraft. That's what element 115 was. Now, resuming this story, just a few atoms of the newly discovered elements, 113 and 115, existed for split seconds after being created in a particle accelerator. They represent unusual forms of matter with properties that go well beyond those of the 92 elements that occur naturally on Earth. Super heavies, as they're so called, may be abundantly generated by supernova explosions in stars. Perhaps they were fused during the fiery moments that signaled the dawn of the universe itself, but here on the ground, such tiny amounts of super heavies formed in atom smashers probably will never find an everyday use. And I'm going to jump ahead a little in the article. In the experiments, researchers fired a rare isotope of calcium at a target made from americium. The new element 115 was created on occasions when the nuclei of the calcium and the americium fused. In the artificial environments of the cyclotron, atoms of element 115, now labeled, brace yourself, unobtainium. I swear to God, it's true. Unobtainium. This latest Journey to the Center of the Earth movie. Damn it, what was the name of that movie? The element that was used in the machine to drill into the core. The core. Yes, the core. Thank you. Echoes in the background and you hear the door closing. That's Ramona. The core. In the core, the fuel used to drill into the core, the center of the earth, was unobtainium. Anyway, this is real science. They've done it. They have one element, they have a brand new element, 115, and they're calling it unobtainium. I'm laughing because of the collision, the incredible collision of science fiction and science almost every day. Americium, that's it. That's how you pronounce it. Actually named after America, I guess. Americium. So when you take nuclei of calcium and americium and they're fused, boom, you have unobtainium and element 115. Element 115. I mean, just doesn't it blow you away a little bit that what was science fiction or said to be truth but not believed so long ago now. Yeah, I mean, here it is. Unobtainium. All right, open lines. Let's do open lines. In the next hour, of course, Major Ed Dames. And on the first time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
This is Steve in Indianapolis, listening on WIBC 1070.
Yes, sir.
It's a big thrill to be talking to you. You're a really great man.
Thank you.
I had an experience a couple weeks ago after staying up late listening to your show. Came home from work on Monday. Got home about 5 p.m., felt really dog-tired. Got in the shower, shaved, left, you know, put out water and food for my cats, and went to sleep. Slept really hard, had some really vivid dreams. Woke up feeling totally refreshed. Expected it to be about 9:30 or 10 at night. Fell asleep about 5:30. I get up, go in the bathroom, look. There's like a 5 o'clock shadow. Cats had drank most of their water, eaten most of their food.
Ooh.
Which, you know, takes them half a day to do.
Yes.
Look at my watch, and it's 6:30.
Time slip.
Have you heard of that before?
You're damn right. Yes, I have. I've had some friends and other calls and emails, and people have had time slips. I had a couple of young ladies on here not long ago who thought they had one. I guess they didn't, or they actually insist they did. But, yeah, I've heard a lot about this kind of thing. So maybe a time slip, sir. Any other physical effects or anything different other than that?
No, it was just...
Okay, then you had a time slip, and I know they happen. I don't know why they happen. They just happen. And by the way, that brings me back to the very first thing you said when you got on the phone. You thanked me for being a great man. Well, I'm not a great man. I'm a talk show host. There are many great men, but I've done being a talk show host doesn't qualify you as that. Not a great man. I'm just a talk show host. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello. Going, yes, you are there.
Yes, sir. This is Jim. I've listened to you on XM.
Yes, sir.
A long-time listener. Really enjoyed your show. I believe I started listening about 93, 94.
A long time
ago. Because I believe the first show I ever listened to was with your interview with Father Malachi Martin.
Oh, yes, of course.
Hooked me from the start. But last night, your conversation with that Brigadier General.
Yes.
Found that to be really amazing.
It was really amazing. You have no idea how amazing it was. I mean, I had a man who I couldn't tell the network I was going to be on because I didn't want traces to occur. And I knew that if I advertised what I was going to, you know, do, and it really was true, that it would then word would get out ahead of time and this man's life could be in danger. So I did not announce it. I just did it.
Right. Do you remember what year he said all this took place? I couldn't remember if he said 83 or 93.
He said 82.
82. Okay,
yeah.
That's what I was thinking because he was talking about the way the gasoline engines wouldn't perform.
That's right.
And at that time,
But the diesel would.
Right. And at that time, all diesel engines were mechanical. They weren't controlled by electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And again, gasoline engines are. So that could have been one thing right there.
No, the whole thing, thank you. It was a very serious interview, a very serious interview. Now, you can reject it or you can embrace it, but as I reflected on it, I didn't find anything to have immediate conflict with. And it's like everything else. People will try and pick things apart. People have done a little picking on that, but not much. For the most part... that is now already, and you know, we're not even how many hours away from it? It's already the most requested re-interview and replay. You know, that interview is not going to happen. It's not going to just happen. This man is on the run. So that's something that has to get set up ahead of time, and I'm not in control of that. Yes, I could conceivably, you know, schedule the man for an entire program if there was that much more to tell, and only he knows that. With the given time last night, we told the story, I thought, in quite reasonable detail, but it may well be. It may be. I'm not saying it is, but it may be that there are little important details that he could yet add to that story that would give us more information to go, I don't know, check the story out or whatever, but it was told... I thought, with credibility from just about every single point of view, Now, it's always possible that he certainly believes it to be true at this point, because it sounded that way, didn't it? But it even after that, it may not be. However, having listened, I give it the edge of, hey, you know what? That sounded pretty doggone real to me. From the high desert in the middle of the night, this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, right here in the darkness where I belong.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com.
Burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and to use them to help us to find.
All right, listen very carefully. Here come the numbers.
Want to take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. Good evening. We're in the middle of open lines. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. So if it's interesting, riveting, we're ready for you. Coming up in a moment, stay right there. Well, all right, let's rock. Open lines promised. Open lines right here. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Going once. Gone. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I have a couple of questions about last night's show.
Sure.
All right. First question was, how is it that with our primitive technology, we seem to be able to shoot down UFOs? It just seems inconceivable to me that we would be able to do something like that. And what your guest was talking about last night isn't the first time I've heard about something like that.
Well, all right. Let's review what he said. He said that we didn't have any aircraft, or they didn't have any aircraft because it was South Africa, that had conventional arms on board. They had an experimental laser, a laser weapon on board, an experimental laser weapon. That's what they shot it down with. Did you catch that part?
No, I picked it up at the middle. He was already on. So
I got
part.
You. Okay, yeah. It was an experimental laser because that's all they had in the air because their other aircraft were diverted to a Russian presence off the coast.
Okay. And the second question is your second guest, the ones that recorded the dead.
Yes.
You know, several years ago, there used to be all this controversy about backward masking on record albums and people playing records backwards to hear messages.
Paul's dead and all that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I was just wondering if they had ever done that with their tapes, played any of them backwards or sped them up or slowed them down to see if they were getting messages both forward and reverse.
Well, my first observation would be it's hard enough to hear them going one way.
Right.
But you have a point, and reverse speech is and always has been an intriguing pseudoscience.
Right, especially and those that they really thought were Indian, Native American languages.
It'd be worth a try. I mean, they could, you know, it's a lot to tackle. I mean, they're tackling hearing voices from the other side already, so
right.
To spread it over into reverse speech would be quite a trip, but what the heck. Someone will do it, I'm sure.
Thanks, Art.
All right, you're very welcome, and thank you for calling. A wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Blair in Sedona.
Hey, Blair.
Hi. When you were talking about telepathy in the Brits, it brought up your May 16th, 2002 interview with Ingo Swann, the father of remote viewing. I think that's what you called him.
Well, he is a father of remote viewing. He's also said to be, by remote viewers, the most talented natural psychic in the world.
Hey, well, listen, then correct me if I'm wrong. He and his mentor, I think Dr. Hal Puthoff, were disengaged from the government remote viewing projects when, I guess, a fear of the telepathic nature of such an operation became sort of apparent, you know?
I think it was the fear of remote influencing.
Ah.
That's my belief. You know what that is, right?
Well,
In other words, if you can remote view something, then perhaps you can take your mind and that power and use it to affect the thinking of another person. Now, imagine how much that would scare the hell out of anybody, that somebody might reach into your mind and virtually direct how you think.
Ah, but that's fear versus love. And if you're in a love state, you know, I guess we are sort of like our bodies and minds are like a life support system, and they have these software programs, you know, mental software programs, you know, either, you know, the radio, TV, the whatever. And I sort of looked at it as sort of a threat to the status quo that wants to have secrecy just to keep themselves in power. Just as simple as that.
Well, that's because that's exactly what they do. The government trades, its stock and trade is secrecy, my friend.
Well, okay.
So, you know, anybody who could read minds would scare the heck out of them.
Yeah, I guess we'd have to have, Ingo Swann said something about coherency. He said, you know, when you talk about the power of prayer or super consciousness and
yes.
the things that change the future, it has to be coherent.
Yes.
And so we got a situation where a lot of incoherency is sort of manifested. I mean, you just look at the local news. I mean, everything is fear, and it's about be afraid of this and be afraid of that. And so nobody's really coherently focusing on anything positive.
Well, that's exactly correct, and it's a great worry of mine. I'm a really firm believer in this whole mass consciousness thing, and one of my biggest concerns is whether the possibility may exist that focusing on the negative will, in fact, precipitate the negative, and that it's all a self-fulfilling prophecy. You can't rule it out, you know.
That's true. I guess so. It really comes down to the individuals. I guess if we get a critical mass, as Buckminster Fuller said, of individuals first, you know.
That's right.
Taking care of it, then we can get to business, huh?
That's it.
Well, cool. I hope you get some positive stuff out of Mr. Daines tonight. Thanks for your time.
Well, you're very welcome, but I don't know that I'd be putting my money in the bank on that one. They don't. Well, you know, his nickname is not there perchance. Dr. Doom. Dr. Doom, they call him. Now, he got the avian thing right. And no, he hasn't yet gotten everything right, but a lot of things they say he got wrong, he didn't, because they haven't happened yet. Timelines being the most difficult thing to cover with remote viewing. But I'll tell you something about Ed Deames. Number one, he's exactly who he says he is. I've read his military record, stem to stern. There's no bull there. That's what he did, what he said he did. He was a training officer in the CIA program. He did that. So take that one as word of somebody who's read his military record. The whole damn thing. He sent it to me. So, you can choose not to believe some of it if you wish, but not his credentials. They certainly are authentic, and some of what he said, quite a bit actually, has come to pass. Now, people don't like to remember those things, and they definitely don't like Ed, or at least a lot of people don't, because he is kind of on the negative side. Kind of. That's why they call him Dr. Doom. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hi.
Hey, Art. This
yes.
Art, this is EJ in San Antonio with WOAI.
WOAI, the great monster on 1200 in San Antonio, one of the world's strongest radio stations, yes.
It is. It definitely is. And I'm not a long-time listener, just my wife got me involved with you. And since that happened, I can't put you down. I mean, it's a great show, and I'm just glad that you're back on the weekends. But anyway, I was calling this to mention about the fact that doing an interview with President Bush and Tim Russert, that Tim asked him about the skull and bones, and he just refused to answer.
Yeah,
and
I thought, you know, he didn't want to talk about, including his military record, for example.
Exactly. Right? But the thing is that, you know, that would have gone, I think that gone, that went over a lot of people's heads.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even understand what they were talking about as far as skull and bone, unless they're
probably
very coast to coast.
Yeah, a lot of people on this program know exactly what that's all about.
And also, too, I like it, if I may just say one thing. You are a great person. You're a great communicator. You're educating a lot of people. You're awakening a lot of individuals. And I tell you what, don't stop doing what you're doing, Art.
All right,
you're
all
doing
right.
A great job.
Thank you very much. That's very kind. But look, all right, here we go again. Listen to me. I am not a great person. That's all. I mean, not in the sense of great people as I understand them to be. Men who are nation changers, men who bring peace to the world, men who go to the moon, men, you know, the normal, or men who rush into burning buildings. I'm a talk show host. That's a talent, and I wouldn't dare put myself in the category of great person. Not. Talented, maybe, certainly with a, you know, a great talent toward the kind of work I do, but great person, that's a special category. And, you know, it's like people fly to the moon, people who lead countries and change the world. These are great people. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, good evening, Art.
Good evening, sir.
I just wanted to offer a possible correction regarding a caller you had earlier talking about your interview last night.
Okay.
His recollection was that the Brigadier General said this occurred in 1982.
Yes. Well, that was my recollection, actually.
Well, I listened to the whole thing, and I really could have sworn that he said 1992.
You know, I mean, a slip like that, maybe I made it. I actually wrote down 1982 when he said it, so
okay.
I was pretty sure I had it right. But hey, I could be wrong.
Well, yeah, the thing that caught me about it is I was thinking that, you know, this is about the time that we were having a lot of problems over there when we sent our military in as well. And
well, there certainly, yes, there certainly have been lots and lots of problems in Africa, haven't there? Civil war, and as he discussed last night, you know, I'm sure they were out hunting gorillas, you know, on a daily, everyday basis. It was an amazing interview. I mean, it was an amazing interview, and I hope you understand over there at the network why I didn't tell you about it. You have somebody who says their life is in danger and they don't want to be advertised. Well, that's what you do. That's all there is to it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I just went, Bruce from calling from Toronto.
Toronto, ah, yes.
Yes, the land of the frozen chosen.
Chosen.
Yeah, I don't know what we've been chosen for, but I guess it's the deep freeze.
That's cool, though.
Anyway, actually, not quite as cool as it was a couple of weeks ago. But the guy you had on last night, the South African general,
yes,
supposedly, did you check out his credentials?
Oh, no, and there'd be no way in God's green earth I could do that either. I got an email, which I read to you. That's how much I knew. I made based on that email, I said, wow. And I made a call, and the one man connected me to the other man, and
right.
I went from there. And that was like yesterday afternoon, and then last night I had him on the air without warning on purpose, and that's it. You now know as much as I do, including the interview.
Right. But in that kind of situation, wouldn't you maybe want to take a few days just to see if he was who we said he was?
Nah.
Okay.
His story was good. No. On this program,
okay.
It's just like, hey, how long did I take with you?
Well, you know, but I'm not a guest on your show.
No, well, yeah, but he was on. Look, the guy sent me an email. It was from an email. It's okay. Like picking up a call here. It's like you right now. I didn't say hello, did I? You just, boom, went on the air, right?
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Okay.
Also, I was wondering, you had a guest on a few years ago, speaking of these kind of people. This was the guy who said, he said his dog was killed by an alien, and then he in turn killed the alien.
Oh, sure.
And stuck him in his freezer.
Dr. Reed.
Yeah, whatever happened to him anyway? Did you ever, like, well, I haven't heard anything about him. And
okay, well, then to catch you up, there are those who say it's all big fraud, that Dr. Reed and somebody else are up, I can't remember, like in the Seattle area or in the somewhere in Washington, and they think it's a big fraud. I thought the story was superb myself. I thought the pictures were pretty convincing, but maybe the whole thing's untrue. That's the whole point of this program, and it kind of goes to what you said earlier. You see, this is a we just do it kind of show. There are occasions where we have very planned guests, but otherwise, folks, just like I pick your call up, unscreened calls means unscreened calls. Boom! You're on the air. And what you hear is for your edification, with the always repeated warning, what you hear may not be true. The person on the other end may be lying. It could be the truth right down the line, or it could be a hoax. There's no way to know, and you're adults, right? You can make your own judgments. And so that's the kind of program this is, and it's the only kind of its a category. As far as I know, there's nothing else like this in the world. Is there? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art.
Hey.
It's Greg in Los Angeles.
Hello, Greg.
And I've been listening to you since that first John Lear interview where he said to not go towards the light after you die.
God, that's a long time ago.
Oh, it sure is. I was wondering.
And it still bothers me just as much, too.
It bothers me. Yeah, it bothers me. I think about it a lot. But, you know, Ed Dames, how do you know that he's not out there to spread disinformation?
You don't.
And, you know,
no, you don't.
Yeah, he says a lot of suspect things. And
yeah, I know, but you remember when he talked about the avian flu coming?
Yeah, but
the bird thing? Boom.
I know, but Art, I mean, 44 dead microbiologists since 9/11.
Yeah?
And how
so
do you know that?
What does that tell you?
That something's going on. What it is, who knows? But, I mean, why don't you ask Ed what he would think about people remote viewing him?
Well, there's a thought.
Yeah.
Maybe all of his students turning on him.
Yeah.
Like so many vipers. Ripping his brain apart.
Yeah. Well, when you had Sean David Morton on not too long ago.
Yes.
That's his thought on it was exactly mine. Is that it's a black op. The bird
well, okay. Oh, I see. All right. Well, hey, maybe. Who's to say? Sure, it could be. It could be something cooked up in a lab somewhere. Could be a lot of things. This is one weird world we live in right now, isn't it? And I knew these things were coming, too. Nor does that make me a great man. I knew that these weather changes, these problems with species hopping, I knew all of this was coming. Don't ask me how. I just knew. And that's what caused me to sit down and write the books I wrote. So I think we all have that, though. I think all of you, to some degree, are sensitive. And if you deal in this material all the time, it forces you to think about this kind of thing, right? And the more you think about it, the more likely you're going to seem like an intuitive, even though I don't claim the first thing about being intuitive. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
My mom used to tell me that my brother... I'm sorry, my radio's on.
Okay, turn it off. It'll make you sound silly.
Yeah, it's the first time I've actually been on the air, so it's kind of confusing me. Anyways, my mom used to tell me that when her father, who has passed away,
yes,
my brother was younger, and my brother would talk to my grandfather and tell him stuff about my mom that he would have never known because he was, like, really young, like one or two.
You mean, like, contemporary stuff that he couldn't have known?
Yeah, he would tell him, like, where my... grandmother been like to the grocery store or something that happened in her life that that he would never have known about.
No, I've got you. I know. Same problem with my guests last night and the work they do. They get all kinds of contemporary information, and that's really scary. It is scary to me because, you know, when you're trying to sit and decide what it's like on the other side, and the other side is telling us things that are going on now or will go on.
Exactly.
Exactly is right.
The other thing is, my mom has been doing some really weird stuff lately. She's been, like the other day, actually it was last week, she was in her room and she was trying to fix a blind, and she was going to get up on the arm of the chair. And as she put one foot up on the chair, she thought to herself, "Oh, this is dumb. I tell my kids not to do this all the time. I'm going to hurt myself." And as she was getting down, she lost her balance and sprained her ankle.
Yes.
So you
got to wonder, did she have some sort of precognitive experience suggesting to her
like
she was about to hurt herself? I don't know. Or is it just mom listening to what mom says?
Maybe. But she's seen other weird stuff. Like we had the Cedar Fire down here in California a couple months ago.
Sure.
And she knew something was the matter when she saw that blaze over that hill, so we started packing and we left. And
well, that's usually a key to, hey, we're in trouble there, when you see the entire hillside on fire behind you, or orange or something against the night sky. That's even the most primitive creatures know what that means. Humans do have precognitive experiences, and maybe even parrots. I thought this story from the BBC about Nikisi, the parrot, was outstanding. I mean, a parrot who thinks in the past, the present, and the future can construct sentences, if not small paragraphs, and responds and has a sense of humor. Now, think about what that means if birds... And they're not exactly the top of the mammal chain, right? Have that sort of intelligence. Or is it just that one parrot? Get that stupid, stinking human hand off me! Maybe one day, huh? Coming up in a moment, Major Ed Dames.
Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And this is a warning that I want to give you, kind of a standard warning. The material that you're about to hear is remote viewing. Major Ed Dames is about to be my guest. He was in the military's remote viewing program, CIA's actually. He took a different path than many of the remote viewers that came from that program. Major Ed Dames looks at some of the darker possibilities for the human race. There's no question about that. And so they call him Dr. Doom. Affectionately, of course, even the other remote viewers. So the material that you're about to hear is, it's troublesome. There's no doubt about it. It's troubling and troublesome and could keep you awake, and it probably ought not be heard by children, so go to bed. It'll be in bed by now anyway. They've got school tomorrow or something, don't they? The world's foremost remote viewing teacher, Edward A. Dames, Major U.S. Army retired, is a decorated military intelligence officer and an original member of the U.S. Army, prototype remote viewing training program. He served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit. Currently serves as executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, a private consulting group. Ed is a technical consultant for the feature film Suspect Zero, and plays the role, by the way, of an FBI remote viewing instructor in the movie as well. Coming up in a moment, Major Ed Dames. By the way, just a quick what may be a programming moment. I don't know. As many of you know, I'm a ham operator, and I'm in the middle of this project to put up this monstrous antenna, maybe the biggest of its kind in the world. It's a double loop, which will end up being about 2,200 feet long, about 4,400 feet of wire, with 14 towers at 70 feet, 75 feet actually, and 68. In other words, a really big-time major project, and we've been getting ready for this for a long time. So, depending on the winds, toward the middle of the week, I'll know more about this. It looks as though it's going to be very windy here tomorrow and the next day and maybe even the next day and on. So if the wicked desert winds blow, obviously this project will not happen. But should it suddenly get very calm around Friday and Saturday, I may not be here next weekend. I may call the network and say I need a weekend off to accomplish this, because very large equipment will come out here and we'll have a monstrous project. So I don't know. Right now I'm just telling you, if I'm not here next weekend, that will be what I'm doing. So it's all dependent on the weather. Right now, as advertised, here is Major Ed Dames from somewhere out in the Pacific. Right, Ed?
Huh? Got it, Jim?
Oh, you heard that story.
Not only did I hear the story, I was fascinated by it when I saw it myself.
I mean, a bird with 950 words, but not just words. He can put them together in sentences. He can operate past, present, and future, which, by the way, is a lot like what you do, and can do telepathy. I mean, this is from the BBC.
This bird is a threat to both of us. It's going to put both of us out of the job.
Huh? You mean...
Got a sense
of humor. You mean he wants to be a talk show host?
And he's telepathic. You've got to put a hit on the bird.
Well, you know...
I've studied ethology since I was a young man. Ethology is the study of the innate behavior of animals. It was the path not taken for me. And so I was familiar with African greys and their massive capacity for vocabulary up to 1,000 words, but I had never seen anything like this.
What about the part about a humorous, Ed, where another parrot hangs upside down and this bird looks at it and says, hey, you got to put this bird on camera.
Well, in terms of cognitive ability, again, I had never seen anything like this in the animal world, which got me thinking about intelligence.
Yes.
And our anthropocentric universe. We look at everything through mankind's eyes. How does intelligence present itself? How does it manifest in other life forms? So I decided to use my skills to check out Terracognito here. I went looking and searching the matrix for the most intelligent non-human life form on Earth, present time.
Yes.
And what some big surprises.
Oh, well,
you said
it wasn't warm and fuzzy and cuddly.
No. I was thinking, well, maybe it is a parrot, because parrots, you know, in terms of intelligence are, as we see, are pretty darn smart. But what I found was something that wasn't apparent. So you can imagine how smart this must be if Nakisi can do what it did.
Yeah. Well, all right. Should I ask now what? What is
it? We're at the top of the mammalian chain, us, Homo sapiens.
Yes.
A shrew, I think, is down there close to the bottom.
At least we think we are, right?
Yeah.
Would appear, all appearances would.
In terms of intelligence, whatever that means, the capacity for knowledge and culture, technology. A killer whale is probably near the top of the cetacea family.
Yes.
Maybe a sperm whale. We just don't know enough about sperm whales' intelligence because they're pretty hard to get a handle on.
Very, very hard, yes.
Yeah. But the thing that I found was something that has been seen before historically, but so little is known about it that we just don't have any idea of its natural history. It is a species of giant squid.
Oh, giants! You mean like the type that live at great depths in the ocean?
2,200 meters down. Way down. 90% of the planet is habitable planet is water.
That's
but
true.
But 90% of that is unexplored. And these guys live way down. They're take a look at their brains when you get a chance, you know, do some research. Look at the brain, although it's built entirely different than mammals. And of course, a squid is an entirely different creature for all intents and purposes. Very alien.
Very alien. How smart might this squid be?
It's darn smart. It's a whole lot smarter than the Kesey. And it's probably smarter than you and I at our worst moments. In 1874, one of them took down a 120-ton schooner, the Pearl, on the Bay of Bengal, in full view of a passing ship,
yeah.
Grabbed that thing and took it down. That's 150 tons, giant squid, okay? In 1930, three squid at different times, and all died trying, took on the same 15,000-ton Royal Norwegian Navy tanker, the Brunswick.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason they couldn't get a grasp on the metal. They had never encountered anything metal before. So they slipped down the stern and into the prop and were chopped up. But it's all the attacks stopped after that, and I'm going to tell you why.
God, that's fascinating. And not one, but three attacked it?
Three attacked, and they all died, but that was it. The attacks stopped. And the reason is...
Communication?
Communication. Mm-hmm. There were others that knew what happened.
Oh, wow.
And the knowledge was transmitted. The way it was transmitted is really fascinating. An octopus, for instance, which is equivalent to, in terms of the relationship... mammals, us and the shrew, the octopus, which is a very intelligent creature, this particular cephalopod is like the shrew in terms of cephalopods with a giant squid at the top. Octopus, lay it down on a checkerboard, it can adopt the pattern of the checkerboard almost instantaneously because it has chromatophores to change color.
Yes.
Squid have photophores. Photophores cover the body of this one particular species that I found. These photophores themselves are as complex as eyes. They have all the neural connections that an eye does. And they're multicolored. So when these giant squids flash and communicate, it isn't just communicating emotions. It isn't just communicating...
Wait, Ed. You said they flash. Are you telling me all these photo... sensitive cells flash?
They're multicolored. They're like the Goodyear blimp with not as much resolution, but they're, in addition to attracting prey, to confusing prey,
yes,
they're sending signals and they're communicating using these photophores. The squid's eye is the size of a basketball. It's up to 18 inches, so it's got the largest eye in nature.
Ed, may I ask, when you remote view these squid and you ran into the shocking truth, how did you, in what manner do you remote view and understand in that process that you've run into that much intelligence? How does that come to you?
Well, first of all, in terms of remote viewing, remember I'm an educator, so I teach this.
I know.
Okay. So in terms of remote viewing, you have to set up the search term like you would an internet database search. And ideas have a reality, a pattern all their own. Just
all
like
right.
Form.
What set you off on this search?
This bird, Nikisi.
Really?
I was just so fascinated with it. The BBC reported on this bird that lives in New York with its mistress. I was so fascinated by it, I just began to wonder about the nature of intelligence in terms of non-anthropocentric terms.
I've been on this trek for a while now. I know this sounds stupid, Ed, but my wife and I have four cats, and I tell you things I know about these cats, Ed. They have emotion. They have individual, distinct, absolute personalities. They have moments of sulking, extreme happiness. They experience a gigantic range of emotions. I mean, the things that I see in these animals, more and more in recent years, I've been reassessing the way I feel about animals, period. I'm serious about this, really serious. And you can see some pretty bright intellect in those eyes. And as human beings, it may well be that we should begin reassessing how we deal with the rest of the animal kingdom, huh?
I have to agree. In fact, one of the reasons I bring this topic up and I'm discussing is I want to set the stage for something else that I've discovered on the planet and that we're investigating at MIA, at the Matrix Intelligence Agency level, something very even more interesting than this. That is, it is an alien form of intelligence. This, the giant squid, the species that I uncovered, is certainly not alien. It's an alien life form, but it belongs here on Earth with us. The other thing that I'm going to talk about, the life form, is strictly alien. And
Ed, I'd kind of like to know at Matrix how you can take the time to do the kind of things that, frankly, on this program, you know we love. I mean, we love this kind of stuff. But I would think that the real meat and money in remote viewing would be working for corporations and probably pretty boring stuff like that compared to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's quality of life issues and a sense of well-being. I have all the money I need. My God, I live in paradise. I travel and I teach. I love my job. It isn't about money. It's about personal choices and job satisfaction. Why do you, you're stuck out in the middle of one of the hottest places I know, dry, dreary, dusty.
No.
Well, I could apply the same.
No.
Similar logic.
No, yeah, it gets hot, but no, this is one of the most beautiful spots on Earth. It depends on how you think about it. Yeah, it's true. People come from New York, and they come to where I'm, and they go, whoa, barren land. I can't handle it. Get me back to the buildings. Well, to me, this is stark, beautiful, unobtainium.
I used to do a lot of work for Fortune 500 companies, and what I'm doing now is what I want to do.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
It's a whole lot
it's
more.
It's a really good answer.
Fascinating field, too. And I am an educator. That's how I make my living. So I teach. I teach workshops. Canadians are pounding at my door right now because I haven't been up there, so do some workshops in Canada as well.
You know, I asked the other remote viewers about you. You know, you're the wild child. And so I always ask, and they are respectful of you.
Well, they all work for me.
Yeah, they're very respectful of you, and they just say, well, you know, it's a path you chose, and it's like, I guess that's it. It's a path you chose. I thank you for it because it is really interesting. I mean, this is fascinating material. There's no question about it. Is there going to come a time when human beings are going to reassess their relationship with animals? And I wonder how far away that is.
It will come when I think it's going to take contact with an alien race to do that. Possibly. Ironically, because we have intelligent creatures here that we're unaware of, as I mentioned. We'll probably want to deal with something from the stars, never know. A good example, as a bird watcher, I'm pretty familiar with bird watching history. There are a couple of species, European species of birds, that went unnoticed until James Audubon found them in the New World in America. And sure enough, they had always been living in the Old World. They were just never noticed because no one noticed them. It's very much like people ask me, Ed, how come, why is it that this skill called remote viewing has taken so long to come about is simply because we've limited our minds. We've limited the way that we think.
Question for you.
Sure.
With remote viewing, could you go back now and view these giant squid, Ed, and discern from that remote viewing what they have concluded about big metal ships?
I did that. They've communicated amongst themselves the idea using this very, very extremely complex. Think of the Goodyear blimp. Instead of projecting an image of a ship and saying, with a big X on it, you know, like, don't do this,
yeah,
don't eat this, don't bite this,
yeah,
don't grab it with your tentacles. Instead of doing that, they've communicated the experience that was witnessed by another squid of a squid dying in its attempt to grapple with this new material. And that's why you don't have any more attacks on ships. They're smart enough to stay the heck away because they understand that that means death, whereas attacking a sperm whale is a doable thing.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then can you discern how far, well, I mean, you said as intelligent as perhaps you or I on a bad day. Human awareness, intelligence level.
No, it's different. It's very, very different.
In what way?
Yeah. First of all, their brain does not process information the way we do. It's an annular, like a torus brain. It goes around their head, and it goes around their mouth. That's why they have to chew their food up. If they swallow something too big, they'll damage their brains. But it's huge. It's absolutely huge, and it's wired in to all of these photophores, these essentially, you've got one big old 18-inch eye and thousands of smaller little eyes that themselves are bioluminescent. So they flash as well as record. So it's a big central nervous system, big one. And they're smarter than elephants. Elephants are smart. They're smarter than this bird. Birds, however, and I checked, are very telepathic. They are the most telepathic species on Earth. So that's one thing they have in there.
For the BBC to be running a story saying that this bird is telepathic, that's a serious thing. You know, the BBC is very reserved, as you know. There's lots of British tabloids where it could have been written, but it wasn't. This is the BBC.
Well, the French Academy of Sciences, when the schooner Pearl was attacked in 1874, said hogwash, until they got the facts from observers aboard other ships. Well, wasn't that long ago when the Earth was flat?
Well,
so this idea of this continuity of what the natural world, what we have called the paranormal world, it's starting to merge. And science needs to do a better job to knit those two worlds together.
Do you believe that ultimately science will be able to explain everything or the majority of things that, say, we today regard as paranormal?
The things today, yes, I think. But there'll still be an infinite number of mysteries out there that will always keep us.
The paranormal will always be ahead of us.
Mystery. There will always be mysteries, and I don't just mean paranormal.
But the things that we do regard as paranormal today.
Well, I'll talk about ghosts later on.
Well, that would be one of them right there. All right, Ed, hold on. Major Ed Dames. And I, by the way, something I've noted about all the emails I get on, the negative emails I get on Dr. Doom, the people who hate Major Ed Dames are more than likely the people who would never miss one word that bad man ever says. They're here like glue when he's here. And I'm listening, and I know why. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Always keep moving, always
talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
How you doing out there in the middle of the night? The weekend rages forth with Coast to Coast AM Major Ed Dames, nicknamed Doc Doom, is my guest. And he'll be right back. By the way, if your radio station doesn't carry both weekend nights, Saturday and Sunday, in their completeness, you need to call them up and say, hey, what's up with that? Because there's some pretty good stuff here on the weekends, both nights. Back now to Major Ed Ames. And Ed, there's a raging little pixel person controversy going on right now. As you know, on the Coast to Coast AM website, we have a photograph, in fact, for my own edification, let me bring it back up here, of what appears to be an object in the sky of Mars taken by the rover. And it is, it's an interesting picture. It's a real interesting picture, Ed. I mean, it could be a speck of dust, I suppose.
Or
it could be the mothership, or it could be anything at all, but it does look suspicious out there. Maybe a pixel. I mean, what is it, Ed? I know you looked, so...
No, I didn't look at that one. What I used remote viewing to investigate was that thing that has the two projections from it, the opportunity photograph that's sitting atop the Martian surface.
You're not talking about the speck in the sky blown up?
No. I'm talking about the picture that popped up about a week and a half ago that Opportunity took.
Okay.
And that was this thing that was sitting on the surface that has two projections from it.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, that was a very enigmatic object, and what I did was look at that, and that appears to be a silicate, and my closest guess is that it's spherite or kyanite, it's sitting on top of the surface. It's a silicate. It's not. It's an inorganic material.
All right.
In fact, a lot of those blue that you see that looks like a riverbed.
Yes.
On Mars, that's all mineralization.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, then listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long it takes, but I would like a quick reading. I mean, there's an object right now. It was I think brought up on the show Friday by George. Can you go to Costa? You got there in Paradise. You have the web, right?
Yeah, I did. Like I said, I did see that image on the Coast to Coast website.
Did you see the blow up of it too?
Yes, I did.
And is there any way that you could give some fairly quick attention to what the hell that is?
Yeah, at the break, I'll need probably 8 to 10 minutes.
Top of the hour kind of break.
Yeah, top of the hour.
Would you take a real initial quick look? I rarely ask that, but. I really would like to know about this.
Now, let me see what I can do. That does not look like a difficult target, but
all right, you look.
Essentially, what I'm going to be looking at is to see if it's natural or artificial.
That'd do. That'll do.
Yeah.
That'll do. Be sure you look at the blow up. All right.
I already did.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right.
I just kind of figured it was a piece of dust or something like that.
Well, I did.
Probably something wrong, you know.
A pixel. There could be a million things.
Spurious radiation in the equipment.
Yeah, could be. But I still want to know.
All right.
I'm not sure where to jump here. This is all so catastrophic that it's hard to know which one to lay first. However, why don't we begin at the beginning? I mean, World War III, a nuclear world war, it says the eve of destruction is not far away. Well,
Let me get that out of the way.
That really might make some of the rest of this somewhat moot.
Not moot, because you live life in the present. But let me get this out of the way, once and for all.
Okie dokie.
Okay, before I do that, I do want to preface it with one thing. This double-loop antenna that you're building is probably one of the best things for the rest of us, as well as for you. When the stuff hits the fan, when this grand cataclysm comes, which should not be that much longer, you may still be up and running.
Well, maybe that, or maybe I'll have a tower wrapped around my neck.
Maybe. But my guess is that intuitively you're doing this for a reason, and I think I know what the reason is. And it may be one of the few stations up and running.
Oh, God, Ed. One of the few stations up and running.
That's great.
Is anybody out there? Can you hear me? Yeah,
there
great.
Will be people out there.
Great.
But they'll be running HF and high frequency.
Well, HF is the last resort, I'll tell you, but it'll work, baby.
There'll be hams. Ham radio operators, amateur radio operators, and they will still be talking, the ones that are alive.
Detroit is gone. Kansas City is gone. New York, L.A., Chicago. But we're here in Pahrump.
Right. The party will be over for most of the rest of us, but you may still be up and running there. I've tried my best to look over the horizon far enough. Short term is pretty easy in terms of remote viewing as a skill.
Mm-hmm.
It's not difficult. In fact, the next thing up is we can talk about that momentarily. But this big event, what I call a grand cataclysm, it appears to happen on the eve of World War III, and you have a massive Earth change. We've talked about this many, many years. That these two things, World War III and this immediate, sudden geophysical event where the Earth starts to wobble and shift,
yes,
they're not coincident necessarily, but they're so intertwined, it makes me suspicious.
Well, that's interesting that another world war would be intertwined. You would think that with a global event of that magnitude, it would... I mean, we're already on the eve of destruction in one way. If something that big were to begin, what then would precipitate the beginning of the war? Any thoughts on that?
It's still that North Korean event. The North Korean use of a nuclear weapon will be the precursor for World War III. But World War III won't be allowed to happen all the way, because it will be overcome by another event. And that other event does appear to be, for all intents and purposes, I am loath to use this on the air, but I'm going to have to do it, this planet called Nibiru.
Yes.
It looks like that's it. It's coming so close to Earth, it actually just kind of causes the planet to wobble. And it happened almost coincidentally with this gearing up for World War III. A nuclear conflagration does not appear to be allowed to be happening. I use allowed loosely, of course, because I don't know if there's any intelligence behind this natural event or not. It's just so suspicious that an event of this magnitude that happens every, 11,500 years or 9,000 years, to varying degrees, would be coincident with a catastrophic nuclear war. What would be?
I know you have trouble with timelines. How coincident is it?
I think we're going to start experiencing some massive earthquakes in about 2005. My guess is that between 2005 and 2007, right in there, that's a critical time. I'm not making any long range plans at all. It's just month to month.
Yeah, actually, after having a program with you, I settle into day by day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, that's what this kind of talk causes. You settle into a day to day philosophy. Well, you know, tomorrow.
Well, we go into denial about natural things. Death is very natural.
That's
most people
true.
In denial about their own death.
That's correct.
So when you
correct,
get something
yeah.
that's usual, death is usual. So when you have an unusual event, it's even people are even more in denial of that. And yet, what were the odds of the sun doing an X-31 flare?
Yeah.
I told you that would happen. The sun's about to go on a rampage.
Well, and it definitely did. I mean, you have been right about a lot of things, but maybe wrong about some. But I'll tell you something, Ed. Man, I'll tell you. There's people out there really hate your guts. And they are glued to this radio right now. Those people who hate you, I made brief mention of this. They leap on every word you say. And they're not even a little bit confused about you at all, Ed. They hate you. They hate you, and with a passion, and it's because you bring really bad news, and so you're a bad messenger, bad Ed.
Well, let me throw some gasoline on that fire.
Okay.
The next thing up, I mentioned a number of months ago that avian-borne diseases would be a very, very serious catastrophe, up-and-coming catastrophe. Well,
certainly
overlapping
did.
That, I don't mean one comes after the next, but overlapping that is another very serious thing right around the corner.
What?
And that is a crop failure because of fusarium fungi mold, particularly fusarium. For some reason, there's going to be an explosion of fungal populations, these windborne molds.
You've been saying this for years.
This one is right around the corner this time. The ones I've been saying for years are like the World War III, like Nibiru, way out there, the ones that really are the end of the show, the denouement. These are the smaller events that lead up to this grand conflagration, which is right around the corner.
Well, when you say right around the corner, what kind of time span does, you know, if you had to guess?
Now.
Now?
Right now. The first crop, the first signs that you'll see of fusarium will be cotton. Fusarium is going to attack everything. Not just grasses, but all green things will suffer the consequences of this, including food crops. But cotton, you'll see it on cotton first. And then you'll see it on other plants.
All right. May I ask a question?
Sure.
All right. I'm looking not just at what you just said, but I'm looking at the bird flu. I'm looking at the fact that I just read a report tonight of there were like thousands and thousands of birds in China that just, they fell out of the sky like rocks, Ed, deader than doornails. Just boom, mid-flight, they died, thousands of them. I know it's all the way over in China, and so it's hard to think about, but good Lord, what if you were standing somewhere and all of a sudden something that would blacken the sky almost with its numbers and it suddenly dropped to ground altogether like rocks, it just dead. That's what happened in China. So we've got that happening. Then we got these species jumping diseases. They're starting to happen, animals to humans.
It was 7 years ago on your show that I said disease would take us down, that disease would be concomitant with a global economic collapse. That was 7 years ago.
You did
say
that, yes.
It's so difficult to pin down time using remote viewing. You can see what's over there, but you can't determine the distance allegorically. It's difficult. So that's why limiting these predictions, it's actually just forecast. I'm not a prophet. You simply use remote viewing, you turn your attention to the next topic of interest, in this case, catastrophes. And
but
the way
it's like so many things began to happen at once, Ed.
It's what I call a confluence of events, yes. A confluence of events, and ending in this big geophysical show where the Earth tilts and there's a whole bunch of inundation, just like the inundations that took out those cities that are now 2,200 feet underwater off the coast of Cuba and other places.
All right. Let's go back to Nibiru or Planet X or whatever people want to call it these days. This is indeed a planet that comes by on a regular basis, 13,000 years, whatever it is. And how much stock do you put in the fact that she's coming around the bend?
I have been in denial about this. I have not wanted to believe what all of the expert remote viewers that I have trained as well as myself have sketched and described as what's coming around the bend.
Well, hold on now. You didn't tell me others had come up with this.
For many, many years. I mean, I've trained world-class teams as remote viewers, we're out there with their own schools and commercial operations now.
So you've been interpreting this or just suppressing this? What?
No, I've been talking to you about it.
Well, to some degree, we've done a little bit of Planet X, but you never were so sure.
Well, I've wanted to believe that it was a comet or just the sun. And I thought it was just too over the top to talk about Nibiru.
It's pretty over the top.
Yeah, but what the heck. Anyway,
when
we sketch this as professionals, this thing that swings by and causes the Earth to wobble, and there are secondary effects that I'll talk about momentarily, it isn't a comet. It's spherical. It doesn't have a tail. It's brownish, purplish. It's pretty big. It's, for all intents and purposes, the size of a planetoid. And this next pass around, it comes real close to Earth. Now, when it does, there's a gravitational as well as electromagnetic problem.
I bet. How much warning are we going to have?
I'd say we will have probably 30 to 90 days easily.
Really?
Because we'll be able to see this thing, even though the albedo, the reflectivity of it is low, it'll be picked up as it comes in minimally to the inner orbits, the interplanetary orbits. So astronomers at least will have some degree of awareness of it. Now, the effects will be problematic. Astronomers will not know because they won't be able to discern the size of this until it's too late, and therefore the mass, you know, they won't.
They'll underestimate the mass?
It won't just be an underestimation of mass. It'll catch them completely unawares. And then, by the time the calculations are done, they'll be loath to report the possible consequences to the public, you and me.
But
I'm just telling you now.
You think, though, that we'll have 30 to 90 days of real, unmistakable, it's too close to suppress kind of notice?
Even if they suppress it, there'll be about a week where all of us are going to see this thing in the sky, streaking by. We're going to see it. We're going to see it. And then we're going to see the effects on the planet electromagnetically in the atmosphere. Those effects will be pretty serious.
Can you describe what you saw as the effects? I mean, is it like a light show? Is it?
Yes, there's a huge light show, and there's geophysical phenomena that are present in this event, concomitant with this event, that are unprecedented. Nothing like this has ever been seen before. One of the reasons why, as a remote viewer, I've had such a difficult time coming to grips with the physics.
What percentage of the human population survives it?
Well, after this thing passes, there's a time delay. There's a delay before the Earth starts, that tremendous amount of earthquakes. And then you have a lot of solar activity because there's a disruption in the Earth's electrical field. So the sun, a lot of protons start coming down to the deck. This is the solar kill shot series that I talked about. But a point's reached, and I don't know if it's because of the melting of the ice caps or not, but the Earth does turn. It just does a turn. I don't think it's a 180, but it turns. That's when you have this massive flooding that kills most of the people that die.
This is so much, of course, what it's just like what the Hopi say.
Well, it's the end of the Hopi, the fourth world, end of the fourth world, another, the end of the Kali Yuga, the Hindu Kali Yuga. And it just so happens that we happen to be alive for this show instead of choosing to be alive in another boring time.
Oh, it'll be a show, all right. Gee, if that happened.
But heck, I mean, it's a pretty glorious way to go. You got to think about it, going out in style.
Well, it would be, wouldn't it, when planets collide.
I don't think you are, though. I have a feeling that you're going to be hanging around with that rig of yours. That is my gut feeling.
It's Parump, anybody out there? Parump, Parump calling. Is there anybody left? Parump calling. I hope not. Major Ed Dames is my guest in the middle of the night. This is what we do on Coast to Coast AM. Listen to it, decipher, decide for yourself. We'll be right back.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Hey, y'all. Ramona just handed me what I consider to be breaking news. That's me. But I guess it is, actually. Just breaking now on CNN. From Canada, Reuters. This is a statement by the Canadian Environment Minister, David Anderson, Canada, just released. You can go check it out on CNN. Here's the headline, Ottawa. Global warming poses a greater long-term threat to humanity than terrorism because it could force hundreds of millions from their homes and trigger an economic catastrophe. That's from the Canadian Environment Minister, David Anderson. If you want to read the story yourself, it's on CNN at this hour. I swear, sometimes science fiction and reality, and it all seems mixed up together to me. How about you? Oh, well, all right. Let me read something from Mike in Perrysburg, Ohio, who says, Art, I don't care what the hell it is. Tell Ed to give us one freaking piece of good news, for Pete's sake. Sheesh. Oh, sure, you get to live. Best, Mike. Mike would like one piece of good news.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, I knew it would be on. All right, so let's move on to this, Ed. Last week and the week before, I got exorcised big time about this. I mean, here comes a story in The Independent quoting Woods Hole. You know, I mean, like, very prestigious Woods Hole. And they're saying, hey, the ocean currents are going to stop, Europe is going to freeze, and the world is going to be thrown into some sort of catastrophic weather event. Very likely. I mean, we see this coming. These are serious people. Ed, it's followed by a Fortune a story called The Pentagon's Weather Nightmare. And now I'm handed a story from Canada that says millions are going to have to lose their homes or leave. It's going to trigger economic catastrophic events. Maybe you'd like to comment on some of that.
I did 7 years ago on your show, and it really dovetails with your own book, The Coming Global Superstorm.
I know.
The fact is that the forecast, whether you're a remote viewer or whether you're just downright intuitive like yourself, is this, is that the weather we will no longer be able to grow crops if they're not infected to begin with, the same way that we've done in the past. They're going to need to be grown in sealed, environmentally protected structures that will eventually become the template for human habitats, because the surface of a planet, including our own, the vicissitudes of the weather and the changes, you can't support the kind of population densities that we have by growing crops out in the open and exposing our water supplies in that way. Think of Earth as a spaceship. You know, we need to have stable environments, either above ground or below ground. That's the long and the short of it.
How quickly are we going to need this?
Well, technologies like that need to mature, so they have to be experimented with. For instance, the idea like Biosphere 1 and 2, you have to practice them and learn how to do this the right way and what might go wrong. We haven't done it enough. We've been too interested in exploring the space and the planets, and we haven't been interested enough in taking care of ourselves.
Well, I am a little interested in this. You get the Independent story, you get the Fortune story, now you get the story on CNN. When is this going to break from the level of news where it seems to be right now? I'm not saying it's not in the news, but it's coming along. Is it going to suddenly break to the networks? Are we going to suddenly see Tom Brokaw on the evening news with a first story of environmental catastrophic projections, or is it going to be a while yet? I mean, it's like it's bubbling under right now, and I don't know. Do people not want to hear it? Is it like listening to Ed Dames? You know, you don't want to hear it. And so they don't broadcast it.
Yeah, basically it's that. It's good news, sound bites, that type of thing. The first thing you'll see is water wars. You'll probably see water wars. I mean, let's face it, water is more valuable than gold. You can't drink or eat gold. You have to have water. And water is going to be in scarce supply, and lots of places already is, of course. So you'll see that. When the kind of things that are happening in Africa, and I'm not referring to AIDS, I'm referring to the droughts and to the crop loss, when that kind of thing starts happening on other continents, then it'll be in your face.
When all of this begins to come down, is there any way that you can look at social behavior through the kind of stresses that you've been describing, whether it's a world war or a planet tilting because of a nearby pass of another planetary body weather changes? Can you look at what happens?
Already done. We've already done it.
And what do you see?
If you can imagine men acting like animals everywhere, not just in Africa, but everywhere, and if you can imagine the lowest that we could fall, lower than even in a war. War is an excuse for anything in terms of human behavior.
Pretty much.
But worse than that.
Worse than that.
All over the place. That's the way it's going to be. Worse than Mad Max.
Worse than Mad Max.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's back to
the
law of survival, right?
That's right. Uh-huh. Exactly that. And, you know, it's like kill, and then the F word, and die. Those three things. That's what everybody sees as an expert remote viewer. Kill, F word, die.
Yeah.
All the time.
Wow. Well, I know that you've got what? You've got yourself a cave over there somewhere, don't you?
I have access to all kinds of things if I want them. But, I have loved ones on the mainland, and who wants to be alive and watch those people check out? I think I'd rather go out in style.
Have you looked at your own location through this?
Yes. Mm-hmm. My location now, yeah.
And is that why you're where you are?
It's one of the reasons I moved here, but I'm not necessarily going to stay.
Really?
Yeah.
Any idea where, if not there?
Where I can be of most help, wherever that is. Because, you know, what's being harvested from this planet, whether it's the end of an age or the end of a life, is a soul. We're just like larvae. The soul is what is the big thing.
If you were to assume that you made it through the coming catastrophic events that you've described, what do you imagine your role to be in a post-event world?
Teaching children these skills, so-called remote viewing skills, how to see true, how to see the consequences of their actions and what's over the horizon.
Forewarned is forearmed?
Yeah, but in a good way. For instance, you know, if you develop a pesticide, let's say, and it looks like it works really well.
Yes.
And as a remote viewer, you can see the ramifications of that pesticide. It may be something that that's pretty much guesswork to figure out that it might have some negative value as well as positive ones. Or you could discover something that you entirely missed that may be detrimental to plant growth.
Does the human population in some form of mass consciousness have any way of affecting these coming events?
I don't know, Art. I know how powerful mind can be in conjunction with consciousness. Those are two separate things. But you know what the party line is, that if we all get together and we think this, then this will happen. There's something to that. Obviously, we remember our action on your clock.
I remember lots of actions, Ed. Yes. I've seen it, but I'm just wondering if such events, these giant magnitude events that you've described, might be affected in the same fashion. Because at some point, as bad as you're describing it, what the hell? Might as well give it a try. I mean, these are so serious and catastrophic that the possibility of misuse of a power of this sort at that point may be the lesser of the evils in terms of risk.
Yeah, I think you're talking divine intervention here.
Sort of.
Because, I mean, otherwise, you know, you're imparting a power to human beings that we don't know too much about here. Remote viewing is passive. Yes, there's an active, our sister science is psychokinesis, one of our sister sciences.
Well, I talked to a caller earlier, Ed, who said, we were talking about why remote viewing got, you know, basically axed. And I've always been sort of the view that it might be remote influencing that did the trick. And I can see the fear that would be associated with the possibility of somebody controlling your mind or the mind of a policy maker or something like that. And remote viewers don't like to talk too much about remote influencing, but boy,
we tried it. We would have been glad to make it work. We would have loved to have made it work. Talk a little bit more about that momentarily.
Ingo says it can work.
Yeah, it can work if it's done the right way. Yes, it can work. But that's not the reason the program was cut. The program was cut for two primary reasons. One, it was a hot potato.
Yeah, I know the party line.
Yeah, and also it was scary to members of the Congressional Intelligence Committee.
That's what I thought.
Who had the most to hide.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because we would influence them. They were afraid, even though it had nothing to do with a Department of Defense license or charter, they were afraid we would delve into their own lives using our tools, and a lot of congressmen have lots to hide. That was a big fear. So, but it wasn't because of remote influencing. Man, if we could make that work, we would have been inside of Saddam Hussein's head, Abu Nidal's head. We would have been homogenizing their brains if we could, because that's what you do as a warrior.
Is there continued research going on with remote influencing, either in the public or private sector, that you're aware of?
The big one is China.
China, really?
Yeah, that's why I actually set up the Matrix Intelligence Agency and the Center for Mind Warfare to counter the PRC effort.
And what is it they're attempting to do? Do you know?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Come on.
Yeah, they're attempting. They have a very, very dynamic remote viewing program, but they also have a dynamic, what you would call remote influencing program to psychokinesis too. It's essentially to do the same thing that we wanted to do, and that's to interfere with the electronics on sensitive electronics on defense systems, U.S. defense systems.
Can they do it?
They're getting close. They're getting close.
For example, Ed, could they affect a missile in mid-flight?
That's what we want. We actually wondered about that because there were some enigmatic things that happened to our missile tests. I won't go into a great deal of detail for obvious reasons, but we were wondering if the Russians were doing that. So I actually had, as an operations officer for the remote viewing unit, was actually tasked with looking at what went wrong a couple of times with missile tests. Because there were Russian trawlers out there. There were always Russian trawlers, you know, monitoring.
Well, gee, Ed, if it's really possible to affect random number generators, for example, that's a very crude example, and it is possible, we know that, then why not the guidance system of an ICBM?
The reason is that remote influencing, so-called psychokinesis, telekinesis, was not made to work on call. It was sporadic, random, and spurious. That's why we dropped it.
But the
we were ruining our own computer.
Sure, but the goal obviously would be to make it reliable and repeatable.
Yes.
And so do you think the Chinese are down line with that kind of research?
They're approaching it in a more systematic way than we in the United States did. And they're moving along. They're moving along.
And our intelligence services, if you're aware of it, Ed, then, well, maybe not. Would our intelligence services be aware of how far along the Chinese are with this?
To a certain degree, yes. Yeah. That is one of the things that we, you know, collect intelligence about is foreign paranormal, work in the paranormal. And the Chinese are number one on the hit parade right now.
How can we let them, how can this not be an area that we would be reactive to if we really know they're working on it? If we have intel in that area, do we just laugh it off and say good luck to the Chinese in that area and dismiss it, or what?
We dismiss it because, again, our criteria here is at least up until a few years ago, until quantum theory has really started making some inroads into the paranormal community, Western scientific method. You may be able to demonstrate something over and over again, replicability, but if you do not have a theory that fits the mind of Western science,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't fly here in the West. The Chinese don't have to worry about being politically correct. If it works and it's not broken, they don't have to fix it. Keep on plugging along.
Yeah.
We have to have a theory. Many times I've been involved in some very black programs in the government, and if you do not have your ducks in order in terms of a theory and how something works, doesn't matter how sexy the technology may be or how potentially valuable it may be as a weapon or a defense system, you're not going to get money to build it unless you can show how it works, not just that it's working over and over again. That's our paradigm here. I'd like to talk about another paradigm.
Before you get to it, Ed, we made a promise here, and you were going to look at that object in the Martian photograph.
Yeah. Art, if you want to see exactly how this is done, it's pretty much cut and dried in terms of what we do. In our formal education, you and I, when we went to school, taught us how to learn about things that we don't understand by thinking hard about them. In remote viewing, we learn how to know about things, usually that we cannot see, without thinking. No thinking. Just
okay.
Immediate knowledge. We are not allowed to think. We get these perceptions and we put them down, and it's all a rigorous, systematic structure. If you want to see that at work, I encourage you, I have another workshop, a beginner's workshop in March, and an advanced workshop, the top of the line, at the end of this month, February 28th, 29th, in Las Vegas. feel free to drop by and give that workshop class anything you want.
Over the hill in Las Vegas. All right. Okay, fine. So we're going to do a plug here, Ed. Right, so you're going to be in Las Vegas, and you're going to do a big workshop. How long is it?
It's, the advanced one is 2 days. That's the one I'm inviting you to. The basic one is in March 27th and 28th.
Okay. All right. And
you can go to remoteviewing2004.com. Get more information on that. That's my one of my websites, or you can look at the phone number at the there as well.
I think that it would be fascinating, absolutely fascinating, and I'm sure that a lot of people would like to go to this. So through your website they find out, or do you have a phone number, or what?
Both. They can go to remoteviewing2004.com.
Right.
Or they can go to ouraliensreal.com. Either one of those two websites.
I didn't know you had that URL. Aliens Real?
Yeah, that was a tape that was done from the Remote Viewing Colloquium that I did in Las Vegas in November.
Okay, do you have a phone number?
Phone number is 1-866.
1-866.
607.
607.
8439.
8439. How much is this affair, if you want to attend?
The first day of the first workshop is $149, and
yes.
That's cheap.
Yeah. It is. And the second day?
Second day is 149.
All right. So
that's March
27th and 28th. Twice. And you come away from that with a crude or at least some ability to remote view? Is that?
You bet.
You bet, huh?
Yeah. The thing that I looked at on break was...
Well, hold on.
Yeah, okay.
Now you can hold on because we're at a break point here. Did I do that intentionally? Well, sort of. That's called the hook. Want to know what that thing is in the Martian sky? Well, you'll just have to hold on. From the high desert in the middle of the night, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Nothing else in the airways even remotely like it.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Can't you feel it? Those drums are like, I don't know, it's like they're in your soul or something. Good morning. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. My guest is Major Ed Dames, affectionately known by many as Dr. Doom, and not so affectionately by others. All right, let's have it. The object in the sky, in that Mars picture. Yeah, I know it's a very fast look you took, but...
It's not in the sky, Art.
It's not?
No, it's a fleck of either metal or dust on the camera lens.
Well, that was one of the possibilities.
Yeah, it's not in the sky. See, when we go into a problem as expert remote viewers, we never assume anything. Now, we might have our individual biases. For instance, oh, boy, I would like for that to be a UFO, or I hope that be a... But once that pen hits the paper, when we do our thing, ego, analysis, assumptions, preconceived notions, out the window. So we can be disappointed, it can be neutral, it can be just what we thought it was, but we're not going to know what it is. Unless
well, when your ego goes rolling out the window, it must destroy half the block.
Yeah, I strapped that baby back on quick.
you're a good, you have got a good sense of humor anyway.
A beagle too. I have lots of UK emails asking about the beagle too, what happened to the UK spacecraft. That spacecraft made it all the way down successfully. The problem is it got caught literally between a rock and a hard spot. the beagle came up against a rock outcropping, and when it tried to back away, there was a small ditch. So all the thing kept doing was going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, within inches, rolling back and forth and back and forth, and couldn't go anywhere. Essentially, it was stuck in this position where it unraveled itself.
Ed, I saw a really cute Hewlett-Packard commercial that's gone around on the net. God, it's funny. It shows these Martians in front of the rover, and this guy, this little green Martian is holding up a picture just like we see, of the arid nothingness, but, of course, there's cities and stuff all around him. There's other Martians. And then the rover suddenly moves, and the other Martian panics, and they quickly copy another picture from a Hewlett-Packard printer, and they hold that up, and everything's okay. It's funny as hell.
That's great.
But what I really want to know, Ed, is it really looks lifeless up there. Really lifeless up there.
Yeah, I don't think there's any life, but what there are there, as I've mentioned many times before, there are sentient machines under that surface.
Underground.
Yeah, there are.
Will...
And at one time, there was a civilization there. That there is at least one feature in Cydonia crater, at least one, a three-sided pyramid that is absolutely artificial. That was not laid out there naturally. It was built by the civilization that lived there, and it's still standing.
Then why not send these little robotic things to Cydonia?
The geologists go where they want to go. I remember talking to Harrison Schmidt when he was after he was governor of New Mexico, one of the last men to walk on the moon. Geologist, and they go where it's geologically interesting.
What is what is this telepresence on Earth? You're suggesting that what is a telepresence?
It's actually a psychopresence.
What do you mean?
Well, remember Bob Monroe, Monroe Institute?
I interviewed Mr. Monroe, yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, I did, shortly before he passed.
Okay, well, as you know, we use Bob Monroe, we and the Army, and the Army psychic warfare team, we used Bob's institute in Nellis Fort, Virginia, as sort of a to vet and assess potential recruits for our program. And what Bob had us and civilians that attended the institute attempt to do was to obtain an out-of-body experience. That was the goal of going through the Gateway program at the Monroe Institute.
Absolutely.
To try to push yourself out of body.
Right.
Well, for a spy, that's great. If you could be out of body, you could pass through walls. You could sit there at a Soviet Defense Council meeting or any place
about
you want.
It. Yep.
The Sumitomo Bank Board meeting or whatever. It was hard. It did happen, but it wasn't on call. So what do you think an person out of body looks like to someone on the receiving end?
Well,
it looks like a little globe. If you catch it on camera, there actually is let's call it an energy. I hesitate. I'm loath to use that word.
What about the word orb? Would you use the word orb?
Yeah.
I would
you
use
would.
The word
oh,
orb.
You would. Oh, my.
Yeah, I would use the word orb. Orbs should not be thrown in with these ghosts, with the ideas of ghosts. Don't mix them up with the ghost phenomenon, which we'll talk about momentarily if
all
we have
right.
time.
Yes, okay.
Orbs are something else. The orbs that are popping up all over the place on charge-coupled devices and memories and on film,
yes,
they are not ghosts. What they are, and this is pretty fascinating, they are associated with a life form on another planet. And this life form has been able, instead of going the way of what we call technology, they've gone the way of taking what is apparently innate, something that we don't know about or really haven't explored a lot, call it a psychoenergetic technology. They've gone that way instead, and essentially are able to either as an individual or a group, to form sort of like an astral body. I use that term for lack of anything else.
That's fine.
And to use that to explore any nook, cranny, or corner in the universe. So when you see these orbs on film, it's actually an out-of-body experience of a particular race, one particular race, which looks like an insect. I call them insectoids. They live far, far away. And they are sometimes one, sometimes three.
They're aliens, though.
Oh, they're as alien as you can get.
Pure sense. All right. You go on to say that SETI is looking the wrong way. Now, obviously, you must have some sense of how SETI could look to find what we're talking about right now. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I do. I think that this particular method, it's very possible that this is the standard protocol throughout the cosmos for communicating, because it bypasses space-time. I mean, mind is outside of space and time.
Right.
And these things, they're not riding through mind necessarily, but they're at what I call a pre-quantum field effect level, just before light becomes light. That's this area in which mind operates psychokinetically, the way it interacts with the universe in this pre-quantum field. It's not a mind field. It's a pre-quantum field. And these things are popping in from that field immediately, bypassing space-time.
Okay, let's assume that's all true. How does SETI, which now uses radio receivers, generally near the hydrogen frequency, looking for life somewhere out there, readapt everything and come up with equipment to look for what you're discussing right now? How do they do that?
Well, if you look at some of these orb photographs,
yes.
These orbs appear to be actually purposely getting in front of the camera, making themselves known. So if we set up, if we know what attracts them the most, and we set up cameras that are interactive rather than after the fact, because it's usually when we get film developed or we look at our charge-coupled device or our camera in retrospect, we see these things. If we do this real-time, we now have real-time interaction with these orbs, which are vicarious, which are surrogates for an alien race.
Are you suggesting they want to make contact? They're trying to make contact? They're trying to be seen?
Yes, that's what I'm suggesting. And once we know that and we have real-time, then we can let them determine what the language should be, whether, you know, like the dancing ball on those old tunes on the movies, you know, bouncing around. They could actually form out letters or do whatever they want. Actually,
Close Encounters of the Third Kind, right, where they played octaves.
Well, that's more like the squid.
Well, okay, but I was just trying to come up with some sort of, in other words, in an attempt to communicate with them, you have to use something they would recognize.
I think they're above us in terms of what we would call intelligence. I think that they can. I think they understand our languages and our wiring in terms of our brain hardware.
Hmm.
I don't think they would have any problem once we can see them real time, scribing out a language or using our own, or changing the way they look and appear. And it looks like there's some evidence to suggest that they can do that. They can actually change the way the orb looks. So they could project, for instance, an image of themselves or something like that.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Yeah. So, is there any practical way that SETI would begin? I can't even imagine how they would begin technologically.
It's not going to be SETI. It's going to be a group of private individuals, probably me, who put together a small laboratory and start doing this.
Well, all right. If you would even consider it, then you must have some concept in your head of how you would begin to try to do that.
Yeah. You know, why done some back of the envelope stuff. Mm-hmm. The problem is, you know, there's lots of things to do. Life is short. And but I think in terms of starting thinking ahead, people are going to have to rebuild. Educate the children now the right way. You know, go ahead and communicate with whatever is out there in the cosmos this way. And not all of us are going down. Some of us will still be around. There'll be some continuity. And life goes on.
People always want to know where you think the safe places are, or the safer places, whatever the better word would be.
It's going to be places where when the earth turns, there's going to be a whole lot of water and a whole lot of places, seawater. So you're going to either want to be way inland, like Perum, or...
Well,
not everybody moved to Perm now. You're going to have to be way inland or very high, either one. Then you have to be protected from winds that will pick up, as I mentioned before. So you need those two things. So, for instance, deep canyons, like in Switzerland, the Lake Valley region of British Columbia, the eastern British Columbia. I've already mentioned Whitefish, Montana many times over the years, places like that. Those are important, and also you're going to need a population base that's friendly. Not Chicago, not Los Angeles.
Perumpians!
I don't know, I've never been there. I heard they're pretty nice.
They are.
Something like that, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, okay. That's something people always ask about, and of course they always want to know, well, okay, when? And you're now saying... close, soon, 2005, 2007, that span.
That's just a guess. It's going to be coincident with the beginning, with the popping. When you see the North Koreans pop a nuclear weapon, which is the madness par excellence. Oh, nuclear weapons are madness to begin with. When that happens, all bets are off, and I have nothing more to say.
You certainly, the thing I will say of you is you have stuck by the things that you've said. A lot of time goes by, and of course people out there say, see, he was wrong. Well, a lot of times then you're right. And can you articulate, Ed, your biggest goofs, your biggest wrong calls? Have there been many?
There have been a few. The first one I ever made was as a commercial company. For a big oil company, they were looking to see what would go down in the Gulf War. If the Gulf War would happen at the time, we're talking 1991 now. My team, a lot of the original military team members.
Yes.
They all worked for me then. Paul Smith, Lynn Buchanan.
Yes.
They were employees for me. We were sketching a mushroom cloud and we thought it was a tactical nuclear weapon. And I put that in my report. And in fact, it was a fuel air explosive, a U.S. Fuel air explosive, a daisy cutter. So that was the first mistake I made. And there have been some others. One of the big ones was with a child, where we thought the child was dead, and we were looking for the child's body. And when you go into the matrix, the collective unconscious, the way that we do with the search term, if you specify body, the way that term is adjudicated by the collective unconscious is a dead body.
Uh-huh.
So that person, we were all forward in time when the person was dead. And we assumed that the child was dead and the child was not dead. So we were actually remote viewing the person at the time when they were dead, which was not what we wanted. So that was a wrong call.
Okay.
That was a bad one.
Any others? I mean, I'm sure, you know, like so many people, you obviously...
Sometimes when we're under stress, especially me, to perform, I think one of the most glaring ones was you asked me to look for Chandra Levy's
Yes.
Senator Levy.
That's right.
And I had a bunch of commercial projects, and if I had it to do over again, I wouldn't do it. But I thought that she was dead and her body would wash up in the Potomac near a particular bridge. And mm-hmm. Her body was actually found about 5 miles away from that in the ground. So that was a glaring error. I don't work like that anymore. I'm more careful.
And to what do you attribute the errors when you do have them? Stress? I mean, is that a big one? Or
not so much. The remote viewing is a three-part process. It's setting up the search term correctly, the skill itself, which is not that difficult to learn, as people who attend my workshops know, but the data analysis, that is a high-level skill. And that's where most of the pitfalls can lie.
Hmm.
Yeah, that there, interpreting that way.
Yes. So what percentage of most calls that you make rely on interpretation of the data?
All of them, because it all relies on that three-part process. Your remote viewing session or your project will not work unless if there's a fault in one of those three steps, what we call the queuing or targeting
mm-hmm.
package.
So then through this, the mistakes and the correct calls, what percentage of correct calls do you claim now?
It's still around 80%, the same way it was when Ingo Swan developed the original protocols. But
80% is so good!
As a team, we can get higher, always. As individuals, we'll always be at least 80% first shot, at least 80%. It's good, and it can be better, but it takes much, much more work to get above that 90% mark.
But it's even at 80%, Ed, it's so good that how could they not use you and others like you? How could they not?
Well, we are used. I turned down a lot of work, Art.
Well, that's true, and I'm sure that I never hear about a lot of what you turn down.
I do fun stuff.
Yeah, well, it's true. Well,
now, I have to do the work. I can't turn down all work because I have to pay my team.
Yes.
Okay, and they're getting $100, you know, an hour, $100 a session. And if we have to run 60 sessions, you know, I'm going to have to charge a client, you know, a baseline of... That's 6,000 just to pay, you know, a team of 6 viewers, not counting myself, analysis, and all the profit there, too. So it's an expensive proposition for a client.
All right. When we get back here in a moment, I do want to take a second or a few minutes and talk about ghosts, if that's all right.
Will do.
All right, good. And then we will open the phone lines for Major Ed Dames. And when we do that... Why, there's just no telling what we may get. I would ask that everybody out there be respectful at least, and a disagreement is just spiffy. If you want to come on and say, look, you know what, I think it's a bunch of baloney, then be my guest, but do deliver it respectfully if possible, and keep it at some sort of decent level of discourse in the middle of the night. You are listening to some very concerning things coming from Major Ed Dames. I'm Art Bell.
I don't want your lonely mansion with a tear in every room. All I want's the love you promised beneath the haloed moon.
Yeah.
talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Ought to be a raucous hour, actually. Hey, somebody wanted some good news. Well, I found it. Report, as just breaking on Drudge. Report, Al-Qaeda has obtained tactical nuclear explosives. How's that for a little good news? Actually, a little dark humor there. Yeah, it is really a story on Drudge. The good news, and there is a little good news, halfway down it says the report has not been confirmed, but they're saying that Al-Qaeda has had a tactical nuclear weapons for a while now. Yeah, the news just gets better and better, doesn't it? So you can check that out on Matt's page if you wish. So many interesting things break in the middle of the night. Have you noticed that? Things from, you know, Europe and Asia, and, you know, they just break in the middle of the night here. News all over the world. Okay, Ed, we have returned.
Things that go bump in the night.
Things that go, and boy, they do go bump in the night, baby. We're going to get to ghosts in a minute, but before we do, I received a call during the break from Richard C. Hoagland. I haven't heard from Richard C. Hoagland since I said the word rocks. But anyway, he called during this last break. I didn't speak to him. Ramona did. And I think he has not called me because, you know, since the rovers have been down, Ed, we've been getting a lot of high-resolution photographs, and I've been looking very carefully at them. And while I've seen interesting shapes, and I have, I've all I can see is rocks. Just rocks. I figured Richard hasn't even bothered to call me, and because I said that. And I still say that. I see rocks. But Richard called and asked if you would take a look at what the rover is seeing in those pictures on Mars and give us a reading of whether they're what they are.
Now, I did that for that thing that I called a silicate.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what Richard is referring to?
In other words, I think...
Or does he hold the photos suspect?
I believe he holds them suspect in the sense that he is seeing things that I'm not. Artifacts of civilization, that sort of thing, tools, I don't know, whatever, you know, something not natural in the pictures from the rovers.
Maybe that Hewlett-Packard commercial is true.
So would you, on the serious side, would you, if you have not yet done so, be willing to look at that and basically tell us if you believe there are any artifacts other than natural things that we have seen thus far? Yes, sir.
I can set that up and check it out at that advanced workshop.
All right. Then on his behalf, I make that request.
Okay. We'll do that.
Are they rocks or RVs? What?
We'll see if there's anything artificial in the photograph.
All right, good. That's it. Now, I want to talk about ghosts a little bit, and I know you do because you hinted to me in the pre-show stuff that you had something on ghosts. What?
It isn't just that they're interesting because they're interesting, they're fascinating, but they really are a template for psychokinesis. Why mind is their proof of principle for people like me, that psychokinesis works really well. A ghost doesn't have a brain, so it's not conscious.
Okay.
It doesn't have a soul. It's an interference pattern. It's just a...
Well, a ghost is not a soul?
No. The souls are harvested from this planet. It's the only thing that leaves the planet. Your mind remains as a mind pattern. your body. We know what happens to your body. Okay.
Then what is a ghost?
A ghost is just a vestigial, a residual recording, a mind recording, if you will, a pattern. Every ideas...
Of what was?
Of what was. Yeah, all ideas, all energies, all forms, all patterns of information. These are all recorded in mind, and think of a mind field.
All right, but so many times, Ed, a ghost, whether through a medium or through electronic voice phenomena or whatever, seems to relate contemporary information.
Okay, drop the medium stuff right now.
Okay. You know, the keys are in the trunk of Uncle Jack's, you know, attic or something, whatever. You know, something like that that's contemporary. That is
either remote viewing, or actually being a psychic, or it is something you don't want to deal with. It's not a ghost.
Yeah.
It's the kind of things that you connect with when you deal with a Ouija board.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, electro voice phenomenon, that's pretty understandable to folks like me, because mind, the way you operate in psychokinesis, you operate through this what I call a pre-quantum field. Okay? And then that pre-quantum field can pop up in terms of electromagnetism.
I did 3 hours of listening to these voices last night. I know you, at one time or another, you've heard them too.
But so, they do not. One thing, tangential to this discussion, yes, I have. In fact, I've had a lot of experience with this. But they cannot tell you about the present at all, because they're essentially... think of a software program that is off running by itself. It doesn't, without any knowledge, any contemporary knowledge. The software program can only respond to what it's been programmed, to what it has learned, the knowledge base that it had, that particular mind pattern. That's it. It can't tell you anything about right now, because it was unplugged in the past. It can only tell you and react to things that it knows, to that particular pattern of information.
So it's only what's left over. It's only like a sort of a weak cosmic echo of what was.
Uh-huh, and it eventually fades. Yeah, it eventually fades, too.
And all these reports of very strong hauntings... surely not all of them are charlatans and fakers. I mean, there really have been some...
No, absolutely. I'm saying they're real. I'm saying they're absolutely real. But it's not something that is not aware that you're there right now.
Okay,
it's a pattern that interacts.
But Ed, there appears an intent, and that takes consciousness.
There appears intent, but it's a pattern that's repeated over and over and over again, just like a record or a software program that you run over and over again.
Yes.
It doesn't know what it's doing because it's not conscious at all. If you cut the head off a chicken, you still have all the rest of the wiring and the neurological connections, right?
Right.
And it'll run around for hours, sometimes days.
I've heard that.
Well, it's true.
I don't think I'd want to see it.
Yeah.
I've heard
it's
that.
It's pretty eerie. But that the chicken's not conscious anymore. But it's still operating just as it did. It's walking around, acting like it's looking for food, that kind of thing.
Point well made. All right, I want to go to the phones. All right?
Let's do it.
Okay. Prepare yourself. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Hello.
Yes, Ed Dames. You never disappoint. You live up to your nickname. You've done it again.
Oh, he always does.
I wish he'd disappoint sometime, but either way.
Love, hate, he always delivers.
Okay. I hope you will be as candid in addressing a statement you made that when you were on last time, nothing was said about it. The time before that, about the beginning of fall, when you were going off the show, you said you wanted to share with Art's audience something you never thought you would share about a life form living inside the earth. That was probably one of the principal causes of many of our problems. Missing people, had spaceships. Are you willing to fess up to that in a statement and elaborate on it, or what?
Life form living within the earth would not be something that I said.
As you were going off the air, it's about the beginning of fall, In fact, it was your last statement before you left, and you even stated, you prefaced it by saying...
I sort of vaguely remember this.
You did it. I never forgot that. In fact, I told my friends about it. I said, last time we tried to get on, we couldn't...
It was like at the very end of a program.
At the end
right?
of the show. That was it. You said it. It stayed with a lot of people.
Okay, repeat that again, the whole thing. He said what?
He said that there was something he was going to share with your audience that he thought he never would share. That one of the principal causes, I'm paraphrasing now, of our problems here on Earth was because of a life form living inside, many missing people, and that they had spaceships.
Okay, do you remember saying something like that, Ed?
No.
Huh. Maybe it was just suggestion from that caller, but I sort of remember something at the end of a show, and I... well, I don't have the archive, so we can't settle it, but we'll find out. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
My question is for Ed. Do animals have souls? And you were talking about EVPs.
Yeah, that's a superb question. Ed, you said that the harvesting of souls is like the main deal here, right?
Right.
Do animals have souls? Have you ever looked at it? They don't?
Yes. No, they don't, except with a few exceptions. They have something like one. That, let's see, if you can think of, let's say...
I don't know if I believe that.
Yeah. Let's say you've got, if you think of the Earth as just a bunch of bubbles, life forms as bubbles, okay? And some of the bubbles leave, pop up, and take off, right?
Yeah.
Just don't forget it.
This sounds like Dr. Kaku's universes, bubble universes.
Yeah, there are some animals that actually do have a form of a soul, but there aren't many. There aren't many. It's mostly free will, but it's what free will humans.
Well, that's kind of a strange answer. I mean, they sort of have souls. I mean, how can you, isn't that like being a little pregnant? You just
can't. They
have
spirits, Art. They have spirits which are different than souls.
The spirit is different than a soul, alright?
Yeah.
I can't understand that. In what way? Define the difference.
Hard to define. Let's see if I could use an analogy here. Maybe. In a radio transmitter, let's say, you can have a piece of electrical equipment that does not give off RF energy,
mm-hmm.
but it's very much alive, with electricity flowing through it.
Yes.
And then there's a radio transmitter, which can convert that electrical signal into RF.
Correct.
And then send it away and it leaves.
Yes, correct.
Well, the RF would be metaphorically like a soul, and the electricity in the box would be metaphorically like a spirit.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I just made that up.
Did you really?
Yeah, I couldn't think of any other way to do that. But I mean, that's what I mean.
You laid one out that you knew I'd probably understand. All right, very good. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello, this is Anthony in Fairbanks.
Hey there.
Yes, I had a question. Actually, two questions. They're both, I wanted follow-ups on a couple of things that Mr. Dames has mentioned before.
All right.
The first one is he mentioned that he wanted to get a professional filmmaker and film contact with an extraterrestrial race, and I wanted to know how that was going.
Okay. Ed, how is that going? That was something you once mentioned,
those
right?
are the spheres that I talked about. The spheres are very much, just so we said, we're straight on this. Spheres are different than orbs. The spheres that I talked about are tools. Many of them are autonomous, and they're self-generating, and they're drawing carbon. I've got emails saying that they're stealing our oil. I mean, that's how rumor mills go. They're taking carbon. So that is that's proprietary work.
Really?
Yeah.
Meaning you can't talk entirely about it?
Right, because it's like a contract in entertainment
okay.
business stuff.
All right.
Okay, and then the other thing I wanted to follow up on is I think you once mentioned about you were looking for a machine or something that on the Earth that is beaming information out to another intelligence somewhere else.
That is connected with the spheres. There's something. It looks like a monolith.
Really?
Yeah, it's near the island of Haiti, and I'm not going to Haiti this week.
But there's a sphere-like something near
Haiti?
Think
of it as a modulator, a modem, a modulator-demodulator, where it'll take signals from an underground area on Mars,
yes.
convert them into action here on Terra Firma. Mostly, it controls these spheres that do a lot of things here. They're tools that are used to either cut a crop circle or mimic a triangular ship or whatever you want to do.
Well, you once said crop circles were markers in time. I'll never forget that.
Cut in ephemeral media purposely. So they appear to be have several different functions. Can't figure it out, can't figure that out, and can't figure out, in terms of meanings and purposes, can't figure that out, and can't figure out the cattle mutilations.
Either can anybody else, Ed. The two almost intractable mysteries really are crop circles and animal mutilations.
I am going to go to my grave not understanding animal mutilations. I've pulled my hair out for 20 years on that one. I don't care how skilled I am or a team is on remote.
Well, now, why do you think a problem like that, a mystery of that magnitude, would be so intractable from a remote viewing point of view? What is it you're running up against? Some brick wall?
No, I just don't understand. I don't have the hardware, and even as a group, we don't have the hardware. You know, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts to comprehend what's going on there.
So are you saying you do get returns, you do get information on this, you just don't know how to interpret it? Is that what you're saying?
Correct. We have to use allegory. We can't even use metaphor or analogy in this case. We have to use allegories to attempt to deal with what we're getting. It's just incomprehensible.
So anything that you run up against that's beyond our realm of understanding, you're not going to get. You're just not going to get.
Because we don't have that. Remote viewing can perceive any pattern in terms of your brain, but because your brain's wired a certain way, this isn't necessarily a software limitation in terms of knowledge base. It's mostly, I think, a hardware limitation, this bicameral brain that we have.
Yes.
There's concepts out there that we can't process because we don't have the right hardware. Now, I think that the soul is reinstalled in another body when we die. That's my guess. And I think then that next iteration, we might have some better hardware. Next generation.
What is referred to as reincarnation?
Yeah, but it's not here, Art. It's not on this planet.
Many have said that.
It isn't on this planet.
Fascinating. Let's see if we have time. First time caller line, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Hello.
Yes, I actually had some ghost stories sort of that I would like to talk about and see.
Well, we're not taking ghost stories right now, caller. I appreciate it, but what we're doing is instead talking broadly about what a ghost is, and I guess more like what it isn't, right, Ed?
Yeah, I have to point one thing out. There's so many mysteries about the mind, so many levels of consciousness that still remain a mystery. There are ghosts of living people. It's a rare phenomenon.
So they are and they aren't ghosts. In other words, they're not the active consciousness and soul of what was. They're not that, but
it's a level of mind that we do not normally deal with. We're totally oblivious to this other level of mind. The conscious awareness that we have right now, you and I talking and
yes.
processing information,
yes,
it's just the tip of the iceberg, as many of us know. The iceberg goes way down, and there are levels of consciousness that we just don't normally or probably ever access, but that are still there. And that's what's generating these ghost images of living people at that level.
You understand that many people who do believe in ghosts will, in a way, have their heart broken by this, because
I've broken a lot of hearts in my time, and I have mine broken as well.
Yes. Yes, life seems to be full of a lot of that, huh?
Ups and downs, yep.
Did you or have you yet remote viewed your own death?
No, I've gone all the way, but I've been too chicken to look at it. I did it for reasons that I've talked about on earlier shows. I wanted to take a look at that idea of the end of my life and look back and see if there were any regrets or if I wanted to change anything.
So then as a remote viewer, you sort of snuck up almost, you feel to the event, but then couldn't go over that threshold or what?
I just didn't want to, you know. Bravery has its limits.
So that was one of your limits, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I don't want to know that.
Let it be a surprise.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on, Ed. Bottom of the hour coming right up. I you tell I like this piece of music? Used on a television program called Dead Like Me, which is coming back pretty soon, I think in June, and you've got to catch it. It's on Showtime. I'm Art Bell.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Love them or hate them, and that's what people do. One thing's for sure, Ed Dames is really one of a kind. Major Ed Dames, right back in a moment. Well, certainly for all you do, Ed, and for all you you do on this program, it is worth giving you a plug. I want to give you a plug, and I know you've got a what is it? A conference coming up in Las
no,
Vegas?
No, it's all right? Teaching. I'm an educator, so I teach,
right.
And the public, my courses for the public are remote viewing workshops, and the next basic one is in March 27th and 28th, Saturday and Sunday. Actually, you don't have to go to both days. Come in and the first day, get your feet wet. If we're in a beginner course,
sure.
Look at the applied course the next day if you decide to stay.
If you decide you really want to rock with this.
Right. Or if you want to order the tape of that colloquium I did in Las Vegas called OurAliensReal.com, all the order information can be found on my website, or you can call that number that I gave you.
Which is 1-866-607-8439. See, I wrote it down.
Great. Remoteviewing2004.com.
That is the right number, right?
It is, indeed.
A lot of people would like to go to this, I bet. 866, that's a toll-free number, 866-607-8439. Okay.
And I've gotten a lot of requests to do workshops in Canada. That's why I started teaching again, because the man was there. So I won't forget about our friends north of the border.
What are the effects of having more and more and more remote viewers? Is there any perceptible change in the work you do as a result of having so many?
Well, years ago, I noticed the so-called 100th monkey effect happening, where it looked like I was getting stupider. And it took me so long to learn remote viewing, and my students were learning it faster.
Huh.
In fact, it is indeed what Rupert Sheldrake has said, that when something gets going in terms of the morphogenetic field, it really gets going and picks up speed.
Mm-hmm. All right, back to the phones we go. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Hi, Art. This
Hi.
Is, my name is Gloria. I'm in Seattle.
Hey, Gloria.
And I have a question for Ed Dames.
Okay.
This is in relation to, the pole shift or magnetic change, electromagnetic change on the planet. I've been told that the way we store information in our brain is very much the same as like a cassette or the strip that you put on a book in a bookstore, that when they scan it and they demagnetize it,
mm-hmm.
That scan becomes erased.
Yes.
So I guess my question would be, if my belief is that if there were to be a pole shift or a change in our magnetic field,
yes,
that something similar would happen to us.
It would blow our brains in more ways than one. In other words,
no.
It could wipe our memories.
No, because the memory is chemical.
Yes.
In nature, the forming the memory is an electrochemical process. So it would affect that because, you know, the baseline Schumann resonant frequencies would change all of a sudden.
Yes.
And you'd become very disoriented and dizzy. But the memories would be intact because those are chemical connections. Those are biochemical connections.
Would that produce, perhaps, Ed, some sort of evolutionary leap?
No, I think it would produce a lot of headaches.
A lot of headaches, huh?
Yeah.
But nothing positive out on the other side.
I don't know, Art. It's a whole lot bigger than anything I know of, or it's big, and I don't know what it would do, and probably wouldn't be able to figure it out.
Okay. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Ames. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, my name's John.
Okay, John, you're going to have to yell at us. You're not loud.
Yeah, my name's John from San Diego.
Yes, sir.
I have a question about Planet X.
Oh, okay.
And I was wondering if it's coming around, is there a way to stop it?
Yeah. Well, I asked the same sort of question earlier, and the basic answer to that, Ed, is?
No.
No.
No. It's just one of those cyclic things. Yeah. There's cycles. I mean, there's cycles, and there's epicycles, and there's phenomena, and epiphenomena, and we're part of all of that.
Wouldn't there come a time, though, in the human race ahead when we might have the ability to alter the trajectory of a planet if we live that long?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, like we've seen as remote viewers technologies that are awing, incredible technologies. You know. In terms of, let's say, the Federation out there,
mm-hmm.
the universe is teeming with life, and you've got the bottom tiers of let's say, a Federation, or let's say nominally or a couple thousand years ahead of us in terms of what we might call technology.
By the way, do you actually see a Federation?
Yes.
You really do?
Yeah.
A consortium of maybe, what, thousands, millions of planets? Who knows?
Many, many, many. And the spread is hundreds of millions of years between the bottom rungs and the top rungs.
When do we get to join the club?
What do you mean we? Some of our children and grandchildren get to join the club.
That was my question.
Yes, we get to join the club.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons I spend a lot of time teaching children, is because a lot of those will be around when I won't be around, and they'll be joining the club, and it's give them some tools to get a jump start.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
Ed, I was wanting to ask you, I was listening to one of the shows on the EVPs, and the guy doing the recording was walking down some steps in the dark, and he tripped, and he went down the steps, and, you know, after the crash of the noise of him falling, a woman asked him, a recorder come through the recorder, asked him if he was okay.
Which to you, sir, means what?
That it was responding directly to his fall.
Yeah, okay. You're right. That's exactly what I asked Ed earlier. It seems, Ed,
That's mind at work. Mind responding. The mind pattern is still there. You know, these software programs that try to trick you to thinking there's a human on the other end?
Yes.
Seen some of those?
So it's like that.
It's a pattern. It's like a software pattern that's interacting with you real time. But it's not conscious. Just like that software isn't conscious, although you might think so. It's a mind pattern without a brain.
Well, I have to imagine conscious. What you're saying is true, because I sure don't know anything different. I really don't. So it's one thing for consideration. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Yeah, Mr. Dames. How are you? You're in Hawaii, I guess, huh?
I'm where?
You're in Hawaii?
I am.
Ah, yeah.
Right now.
I'm going to sail out there myself one of these days. As soon as they get the marinas in shape out there.
Do you have a specific question, sir?
Yeah, you know, I called Art one time, and we talked about chemtrails, my idea was way out there, I was saying, you know, along with weather control and everything else, but I think, you know, way out there that chemtrails could be a weapon, you know, because you have particles charged in the atmosphere, and you could, you know, shoot some kind of electronical pulse into that and disable anything that's floating in the atmosphere. Next time you were on, I heard you say the same thing, you know, and I was like, oh, well, Ed Daves agrees with me, you know. I already know I'm full of, you know what, and...
All right, well, let's find out.
I mean, I love listening to you.
Yeah, all right, sir, hold on.
A lot of stuff you said.
Take a deep breath, please.
Okay.
And you did give us the definitive word on chemtrails, didn't you?
Are they ours or theirs, and Ed said they were there. It was their weapon. Like, what's that about, Ed?
No, I didn't say anything like that.
I don't recall that either. What exactly did you say about chemtrails, and please repeat it now.
I said two things. First thing I said was that I can't talk about them.
Well, you said that for a long time.
Yeah. Second thing I said was all the remote viewers that I have trained, you know, up to at least intermediate stages of remote viewing,
yes,
I invite you to look at something. To remote view the United States' most secret weapon system.
So he shouldn't have to read too much more behind the lines or between the lines than that, right? We'll leave it at that. International Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Daames. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Oh, I was waiting.
Now the waiting is over.
Sorry. Ed, did you happen to notice the mad cow?
I think we just lost him. Are you there, sir?
Beg your pardon?
Are you, okay, you are there. The mad cow, you were saying?
Yeah, the mad cow issue. How severe is it? In American
It'll result, as I mentioned before, in the discontinuation of cattle as human food and the discontinuation of milk, cow's milk, for human babies.
And how far down the line is that? Is that also in the 2005 to 2007 period, or everything else?
I think we're looking at probably towards the end of this year, you're going to see some very, very... I think that's the next thing after some of the crop failures, too. Because, you know, cows eat crops, too. So there's going to be a lot of starvation as well.
Yeah, and I'll be at the front of that line. I'm a burger guy.
Yeah, I know you are.
I don't want to hear this. All right, first-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Daames. Hello.
Hey, how you doing, Art?
Well, I was better a moment ago. I mean, planets, you know, colliding with us is one thing. No more burgers. That is the end of the world. So, what's up?
Yeah, I had a question about Ouija boards.
Great.
You mentioned it earlier. I was just wondering, you said that you're not talking to ghosts on Ouija boards. I wonder what you are talking to.
What a very good question, actually. Ed, yes. Who are you talking to when you talk to a Ouija board?
You're actually interacting with sometimes ghosts and sometimes what appears to be something else. And I'll tell you why I don't know a lot about them, because I don't want to play with a Ouija board, and I haven't taken the time to investigate something that will hurt me and hurt the people around me.
Good
thinking. That appears to be the case.
It really does. Ouija boards are dangerous. And that's that. They open doors.
A lot of the so-called things that people channel, I have a lot of experience in this area too, a lot of those things attach themselves to living persons via being facilitated by things like Ouija boards. You open sort of a portal,
mm-hmm.
That idea. Things come in and they attach themselves to you, and they don't go away real quickly. A lot of what people, when people channel things, these, let's call them entities, are very deceptive. They're extremely deceptive. They'll do anything they can to not break that attachment once they have it. They're like a cancer, and you can't cut it off easily. But there's one clue about this, one thing. When you go to somebody like Jay-Z Knight or whatever, and they're channeling Ramtha or whatever, ask them this when they're channeling. Ask them a question about something that's present time.
Mm-hmm.
And almost, you know, 99% of the time, you will get an obtuse answer, because You're talking to something that's dead. You're talking to a mind pattern that has no access to present time, and they cannot answer the question because all they know is what they knew until that person, the living entity, died.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Good morning, Mr. Bell, and good morning, Mr. Dames.
Hi.
Enjoy your show, Art.
Thank you.
What a vast variety. Mr. Dames, I have a question that you probably could be the only person who could answer. An experience that happened to me seems to relate closest to what you're saying about remote viewing.
What was the first part of that, sir?
Well, he's saying he's got had an experience that you can relate to.
Okay.
I don't think he's hearing you very well, caller. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. How's this? Is it better?
It's better.
Yeah.
Okay. An experience happened to me that the closest thing I have ever heard to explain it would be in your field of remote viewing.
All right. What happened?
First, I'll state this. I'm most of my life Christian, so this was not a Christian event, which then told me that there are things like remote viewing. I'm very familiar with being persuaded by
Christian
spirits.
Okay, well, what did happen?
I went to prison. I was involved in a corporate scandal, ended up in prison.
Huh.
In prison, as if I was standing there, and as if myself, I didn't see anything, I felt this, as real as real, though, as if myself was telling me, do not finance a particular store for my wife, because it would end up in disaster for the marriage. Now, I'm telling you, that was as real is.
You mean this was a clear audience. You heard a voice?
No, did not hear a voice.
Okay, here's the deal.
Hold on, please. Caller, hold on.
Yeah, here's the deal. We, as experts, this is a skill. This is a skill. We don't have any monopoly as remote viewers on the truth or on revelation. We only have a monopoly on accuracy and systematic ESP. That's where the monopoly, and that's why it was used by the military.
Gotcha.
Because it was far more accurate. Everybody is part of this paranormal process. So, revelation is no surprise to me whatsoever. We just do it on call. That's all.
Well, the proof of the pudding with regard to the reliability of the whole thing is that he was in prison, which means there was at least one premonition that either he didn't pay attention to or didn't have.
We all have them.
Yes, indeed. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Yes, quickly, I'd just like to try to get a better degree of definitiveness on this 1 to 3 year time frame. Because I couldn't help but notice in the first hour, Major Dames was pretty definitive in his tone when he said 2005 to 2007. But
yes.
In the second hour, when you came back to that, Art,
yes.
Ed, you said, well, that's just a guess. And
it is. I'm waffling and I'm vacillating. I just don't know. It's just a guess. It's a guess that I'm going to run with and act on, but that's all that it is.
Well, if it's strong enough for you to act on, to adjust your life for, then it's worth our knowing that. In other words, you will take personal actions. You feel that strongly.
Yeah, I've already done in my own life, yes.
All right, I'm going to try and squeeze one last person in. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames, but not a lot of time.
Okay. Am I on?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a question about the giant squid that Ed talked about. But
all right, what is the question?
The question is, there's a phosphorescent pigment that is found in minerals and also in some animals like lightning bugs and
luciferase.
Do squids have that same quality?
Okay.
They have more than that. Yeah, they have luciferase and other things, but mostly luciferase.
And they are, you're sure?
Bioluminescent.
Yes, and you're sure of one thing, that the squid we're talking about are really, truly that intelligent?
I'm positive, just positive. Yeah, and you don't want to run into it either because it's intelligent and it's very formidable.
as an enemy?
No, just as it's as an animal, as a creature.
Oh, yes, but sometimes there are people who associate intelligence with killing for fun, you know.
In terms of orcas and killer whales, you're talking about playing with seals and things like that. No, I'm not sure what this does. I don't know enough about its natural history, but I'm sure we're going to find out more.
And as you do, we'll look forward to your being here to tell us about it. All right, Ed?
Will do.
We're out of time. Good night, buddy.
Pleasure's been mine, as usual.
Take care, Ed. All right. There you have it, Major Ed Dames, and that's how quickly the weekend is gone. And that is quick, isn't it? Well, all right then. We'll see what happens with the antenna. Perhaps see you next week, perhaps the following week. But Coast, of course, will go on. And here is the beautiful Crystal Gale with the right words to get us out of here. From the high desert, good night.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert.